Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee. One N, two T's. And there's no Kanata here today, so I don't know if we're going to love loving things, hate hating things, or just, I don't know, we just get to say whatever the hell we want to because that guy's not here.
Damn.
Yeah, he just makes everyone try to love everything, and you know what? I'm sick of Jeff Kanata.
Seriously.
Say it out loud.
We're all sick of him.
I'm going to go online petitions because they work.
Honestly?
Like crazy.
Honestly? We all know this. Kanata. Andrea Renee, better than Jeff Kanata.
Jeff smiles too much.
Yeah, seriously. So actually, the hierarchy would be Todd, and then Andrea, and then Jeff. Somewhere like that. He's going to be so mad when he comes back. He's going to beat the crap out of me.
I'm going to burn this chair when I'm done sitting on it.
Oh!
I don't think he's going to come back after this, actually.
Yeah. Maybe he'll just come back and kick me out. He'll be like, oh yeah? Well, you're underneath me, bitch. Anyway, the rest of the cast up in here, that would be Mr. Zav D'Amatos next to me.
What is up, fellas? How you doing?
And next to him, Mr. Andrew Pfister from EGM, the internets, and the rest of the world.
Hey. Yeah, and that's accurate.
And oh, you did get his bio.
my people got my information over.
That was nice of them, wasn't it?
Andrew Pfister is alive.
And the lucky Irish at the end of the table, Mr. Christian Spicer.
1S, 1P, 1I, 1C, 1E, 1R.
And if you happen to be in Los Angeles today on this fine Friday, you can go see him in Hollywood.
Hollywood?
Hollywood.
10 p.m. Improv. I'll be there. Yeah, hang out.
Go check it out. It'll be funny. And he promises not to steal more than at least two, you know, maybe only one Seinfeld routines.
I just go all my jokes from Gaff because the shit they say on there is hysterical 100% of the time.
It is pretty funny. You better watch out. If you say that, they will be lawyering up and looking for their fucking royalties. They'll be like, where's my 15%, bitch?
That's right. That's my writing crew, Neo Gaff.
All right, so here's what we got going on today. We have the rest of these guys, other than me, have all played L.A. Noir. Have you all finished it?
No.
I have not.
No?
All right.
I have.
So Zav's finished it, and then the one thing I know from all of you, from the way you've sort of like tweeted and stuff about it, is that like you like it, but you're maybe not as completely in love with it as some of the initial.
It's interesting. It's worth playing. It's we'll get into the nitty gritty.
So we've got that, and then also we had Judges Week last week, and there is some awesome stuff that's coming off of Embargo that we can talk about, like BioShock Infinite.
Game of forever.
Even if it's not till 2012, 2012 can't get here
Game
fast enough.
Game of forever.
I'm just concerned that if 2012 is the end of the world, we need to make sure that Ken and the rest of those guys at Rational know that they need to get the game done in enough time for me to play it before the end of the world.
So end of the world is supposed to be end of 2012, right?
It's the end of 2012? All right, we're fine.
I think so.
We're fine.
Which is
we're
why
fine.
It's infinite, because you won't finish it by the time the world ends, so you'll never know how it ends.
Modern Warfare 3.
Guns.
The gunning. That's going to be trademarked as soon as I get off of this mic, and that'll be before you get a chance to
that
do
might
it.
Be spun off into its own title.
The gunning. What else we got? A couple of really interesting titles that I thought aren't quite as big a names, but are absolutely worth paying attention to in From Dust and Bastion. Really fantastic, artistic, downloadable games will be coming out this summer. So we got all that. We have listener feedback in the third segment, and we're going to go back to Todd's question about seminal moments in gaming, because a lot of you folks got into the comments and commented on that. And I want to hear it also, like some of you guys who didn't get a chance to talk about that last week. I'm very curious to hear yours. That's a great question. Todd was a great guest, by the way. Mm-hmm. He was a really great guest.
Yeah.
In the music, we have Tantrum, Hip Hop Beats back for you. We're dropping it.
It's hip hop flavor.
Yeah.
The flavor of Tantrum.
Longevity is dropping the beats. We're just playing them. But that's how it goes.
Okay.
And then you're here for the news.
I am. I'm going to try to keep it up. Yeah. We have a lot of shit to cover.
We do have a lot of shit to cover. Well, you know what the good news is? we sent Ryan on a beer run at the end of the opening video.
But it's American beer, right?
No, well, so I'm gonna be sadly actually, disappointed.
We'll see. We just gave him one instruction.
Wait, are we sure he just won't get drunk? Like he went on a beer run for himself? Is that what's going to happen?
I got the fool's money.
I don't know.
I'd be proud of him if he did.
Strange.
That actually, yeah, you know what?
You know what? It's hard. Good on you, yeah. Ryan. Yeah.
That would be someone who understands the show.
Yeah.
But, you know, we did talk about 40s, so it's entirely possible that he may just come back with some, you know, fine American malt liquor.
We were supposed to go out after this. We might just have to go look in ditches for Ryan because he fell asleep somewhere.
On the beach.
He'll be like the guy laying there with a parka over him and it's 90 degrees out.
40s taped to his hands.
I know that guy.
Yep.
I know that guy.
He lives in San Francisco now.
He's also the guy who gets the head-on treatment. All right, enough of this. Let's talk about some games. L.A. Noir, Detective Tomfoolery, and Shooting Guns.
I don't know if you would put tomfoolery in there.
There's no tomfoolery, so it's just detective work.
It's funny, I'm looking at the table, and it seems I'm pretty sure that Christian, I'm going to guess, likes it the least out of all of us, and then probably Andrew, and then me, so it's a little hierarchy here. Like, I know you were mentioning that you, Christian, were actually really not down with the game at all. What was it?
Okay, so before you get
into
opinions, do this, at least for the listeners, lay out a quick look of what L.A. Noir is and what's involved in the game.
Cool. So it's a Rockstar published game by Team Bondi. Is it Bondi or Bondi?
I'm going to say Bondi.
Bondi. Developed the game. And it's a period game. It takes place in the late 1940s in Los Angeles. You play as a character named Cole Phelps, who is returning from the war and is a war hero, but doesn't consider himself to be one. And he is rising through the ranks of the Los Angeles Police Department. And you basically start the game off, basically his first day, you kiss your wife goodbye, and then the game goes off, and your first day as a cop, and you rise through the ranks.
All right. What division do you start in?
You start in
Street,
isn't it? Like you're like just a patrolman, and then you go to traffic, homicide, vice, and then arson. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, this is pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't realize there was a like entire progression thing that was going on. I thought it was all just going to be like murder mysteries.
Well, I mean, the progression to me comes across as Phelps from vice, Phelps from arson, Phelps from traffic. Like that's not, I mean, the cases become longer and more substantial as the game progresses, but it's not necessarily correlated to the division of the department you're in. At least it didn't feel that way for me, where, I mean, I thought earlier in the game some of those cases were better. I haven't completed it. I'm not in arson. But I don't know. It's like they need to progress the story some way and get you deeper into the department. But it's not as if, ooh, I'm on Vice now. This is going to be so awesome. It's like, hey, I'm doing this.
Yeah, there's
same
no
shit.
Real fanfare to it. It's sort of like, especially at the end of Homicide, because I think the way that Homicide ends, what happens at the end of it is really cool up until the very last minute where it just abruptly stops. And then you go to Vice. There's no fanfare to it. Like, you don't really learn what happens next to those characters. I mean, there's a conflict there for like 3 seconds at the end of Homicide where you're like, I would like to see what these guys are going to do next. And then you kind of just pass over that and go to Vice and it's like 6 months later and stuff. It doesn't really work for me in that sense.
So yeah, real quick before we get too into I like the game. I'm glad I wasn't on last week when Jeff said such nice things about it, because I pretty much agree with everything that was said last week. My problem with the game is that's all the good stuff. And I feel like we see these mature, not bloody, you know, Gears of War type mature games, but these sophisticated, interesting plots, pushing storylines, that type of mature game, and we give it a pass for all the other shit it does wrong. Because I want a game to do all that right, but driving is still wonky, running is still very rock star, or turning and like navigating objects is weird. And there's so many little things that if it was just a regular game that did this type of stuff, I'm thinking like, you know, product number 7 for the GameCube. I think there was a PS2 version of it too. Cool game, but the controls were kind of meh. And I know it's an action game, but it wasn't pushing this mature plot or broader context. And people were like, yeah, it does a lot cool, but the controls are kind of weird and it's not that great. And Rockstar published games, I feel like, get a pass at all that because they're bringing this big story and doing all this and pushing us and saying negative things about women, but it's wrapped about the era, so it's cool and it's really pushing us. And it's like, how about let me walk up these stairs appropriately? How about let me not walk around a room where I just walk around the perimeter of it? And then, so the way the evidence system works in the game is you basically walk around a room. It's kind of like a point and click, which I get, which is cool. But then when you get near something, I think Jeff talked about this last week, you know, your controller vibrates, you hear a chime, and you pick up that piece of evidence. And I know the game needs a tell, But there's tons of shit in rooms that is an in-game object that you're not able to pick up and that doesn't, you know, rattle the controller. But you think maybe would, like a picture of the family. Then again, you're in a room and the controller vibrates. You're like, oh, there must be a clue here. And you pick it up and he picks up a bottle and goes, nope, not interested. Why the fuck do I pick it up then? Like,
right.
if I can't investigate everything, don't put that. Why does my controller vibrate for, oh, hairspray, not interested.
Well, it sounds to me like they got caught up in that thing of like, well, we don't want it to be so binary of,
right.
if your controller vibrates, then it's a clue, and then that clue must be important. But at the same time, it sounds like they weren't able to, you know, model everything in the world or even model very much. So, yeah, it's like that whole, well, we want it to still feel like you're not just grabbing only
right.
the cool parts. But that's sort of a that's a tech limitation.
It's like at a certain point, it's like a needle in a haystack situation where if it was just like three objects that you could pick up and then all these other scattered things, I would envision someone playing the game just by like running in a circle, like until their controller vibrates and picking it up. Like that to me isn't fun.
Which is still kind of what I do. I don't know, because like I'll see. I've just learned. I mean, I'm thinking it was Homicide. I forget the case, and I don't want to get into it for spoiler reasons. But there was a cool painting on the wall of this home you're in, and I was like, oh, I want that. To me, seemed like it could be totally relevant for this person, and nothing. And I was still missing a piece of evidence,
right.
And it just wasn't that. I think for me, it's the same thing. The problems I had with Red Dead and GTA, where it does so much, it needs to go all the way or just do less. Because when those things break down, it just pulls you out of the experience. When I get caught on a door handle, when I pick up the 10th generic bottle. When I'm driving and I run over four pedestrians and it just says...
That drives me crazy.
Avoid hitting pedestrians. Like, no, my shit should end. Like, make it...
Don't...
Take the next step.
Don't have pedestrians dart out in front of my car during a mission that I can't avoid them and then tell me I shouldn't run over them.
Yeah.
Or make it a bonus level.
Yeah.
Is that the Carmageddon countdown?
That would be awesome. Carmageddon DLC for LA Noire. See, the thing that you're kind of getting hung up on, that it sounds like you don't like the engine specifically that Rockstar tends to use for the games that they publish, like GTA uses the same engine. And so I think that that's something that, to me, it doesn't really bother me all that much that he walks a little wonky. What bothers me is that the characters have this very strange look to them, because some of them look amazing and some of them look really realistic. And then others look like it's this blank slate.
Yeah.
And you could totally tell the difference between people who have been modeled using the facial recognition or construction software, or that they use those cameras, and people that they don't. And the most jarring of which is there is a guy you interview pretty early on in the game, and he has two daughters. And he is modeled after a character. You interrogate him, so you know, you have to talk to him. His two daughters go into the kitchen and sit there. They're not modeled after anyone. They look horrific.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to kill them. There are points in the game where you're, like, doing random crimes where you... The thing that is funny about this game...
Aren't you a policeman?
That was legal in 47.
I wrote on Twitter the other day that I think the sequel to this game should just be Phelps in front of a disciplinary committee answering for all the people he's murdered throughout the entire... Because the game is hilarious because it's this guy who's struggling with this past, and you don't really know until the very, very end why he's struggling with this past.
And it takes way too long for that to develop.
It takes way too long.
I do not care. I'm almost done with Homicide, and I just
and you know what?
Cannot relate.
You could probably figure it out at this point.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty easy to figure out. But anyways,
so was the alien possession.
You know what? That's what it was. Area 51 totally exists. That's what this game is about. It's really weird, but I'm waiting for the zombie DLC for this shit, too. So the thing that is funny is you go to these random crimes and you can purposefully try not to kill someone when you're chasing some random person who takes a hostage, shoot him in the leg. And when the cutscene starts and you see the body, he has like 19 bullets in the chest. I didn't do that unless like some sniper is like out of the blue, just shooting this guy. I try to shoot a guy in the leg. And when it showed the cutscene with his dead body on the ground, he had all these bullet holes in his chest. I'm like, am I like the magic bullet exists in Cole Phelps's gun? It's so weird.
For a game that is supposed to be pulling me into the character, that seems very jarring.
So I wrote about this, and then Rockstar told me that the reason why there are a lot of those random crimes exist in the game in order to give more action to it, because the storyline itself doesn't have a lot of action focus. So the random crimes are supposed to be action. Some of them are just ridiculous. There was one random crime where you chase this guy who's wearing like a pot on his head, like a tinfoil hat or something, and you chase after him.
Oh,
and
God,
you run up a building and you're chasing him for like fucking 5 minutes, and then he just jumps off a building and kills himself. And I'm like, that was pointless. There's another one too where
that's the whole thing.
That's the whole thing. And then there's one that's even shorter where this guy is standing. I mean it's a random crime.
Spoiler alert. Thank you for spoiling that. Now if I see the dude with the pot who's like,
Well, you don't see them because they're random crimes.
I'm not gonna chase that dude, he'll fall off the building in a minute.
When you get to the point, you actually won't know it's them until it actually loads up. But there's another guy where he's on top of a church and he wants to kill himself, and then all you have to do is go up to where he is. And he's like, okay, I changed my mind. Like, it lasts for a minute. And I'm like, what the fuck was
Sometimes all it takes is someone to let them know that you care. And we care.
I wanted to push him. Because he's wasted my fucking time.
Step back from the ledge. It's all right. Come down.
The only other thing that I'm going to get, the thing that bothers me the most about the game, and my review just went up on Shaq News about it, is, and I like the game. I like the game, but the thing that really bothers me is the game, the storyline is so abrupt. I mean, things end so quickly. The homicide stuff at the end of that is really interesting, but it just ends so abruptly, and it's sort of this situation where, like, you have to accept what happens, and that's the way that it is, and, you know, Phelps is like, I don't believe that this is how it should be, and then it's, like, 6 months later, and he doesn't give a shit anymore. Yeah. No one brings it up ever again. The ending, the whole game itself is structured so you have to learn about this character, and you keep seeing flashbacks about what he's done throughout his entire life. And at the very, very end of the game, the last 3 minutes, you find out why he's looking for redemption, and the redemption happens, and the game ends. The last 3 minutes of a game that takes 20 minutes to finish.
But dude, so actually, we were talking about this earlier, and here's my theory on this, because one of the things Zab pointed out was that they did hire a good writer to put together the story. Mm-hmm. So my hypothesis here is that writing for a game, much like writing for any other media, has its own thing. And while the writer may know, hey, I need the story to have rising action, mm-hmm. and I need to have the climax, I need to have the denouement, I need to have this whole package, it's then up to the producer, or maybe it's the director, to then, because, you know, like, lay that tapestry across the game.
Because my biggest issue with the game, and I agree with all you guys and your you know, assessments of it, but the thing that bothers me the most is that these interrogation scenes, these questioning scenes, the writing is good, you can tell, but the directing it's not there, because you'll start off and, like, you'll be interviewing, say, like, the boarding house lady, and okay. you can tell she's like, she's honest, like, completely mm-hmm. honest. And some question will come up, you're like, doubt. And Cole just changes into this, like, why are you lying to me?
Yeah.
What are you trying asshole. To hide? Yeah. And then, yeah. and then, you know, after that one.
Well, without motivation.
Yeah.
It's like jumps from one line of dialogue. It's like, tell me about your pudding. Tell me about the goddamn pudding!
Yeah. yeah.
It's just really inconsistent.
They wrote the scenes, but they didn't, like, direct the voicing for the scene.
I think they directed them all, like, separately.
Separately.
You can tell everything is done very separately.
Now, do these lines of anger.
Yeah.
You just reads through
exactly.
20 pages.
But one thing that really bothers me, too, is when you...
Hold that thought, write it down before you forget it. But, like... it's not just the voicing when we talk about direction. It's everything about setting the stage. And so I haven't seen this,
sure.
but I just want to point out, like, you know, we do not see in video games to this date really good story delivery inside the context of me still playing the game. It's always we got to stop mm-hmm. and watch a video, and then we go back to the game, because now we're back to the mechanics of the game. And I'm curious to see what Kojima is able to do as he continues to work on games. I'm really glad he's continued to work on games, because, you know, so if we're talking about the way things lay out, at least when we play a Kojima, like when we play a Metal Gear Solid game, like, you always feel like this game is really, like, the narrative may be hokey sometimes. It's like,
sometimes.
Know, okay, it's completely silly. But what's really awesome is, and I think this is the reason it has so many fans, is that when you play the game, it's all consistent and it comes to you in such a nice storytelling package, something that you can sit and really enjoy, and you don't get this sort of, like, abruptness.
Or Team Ico games, where, I mean, that's my problem with this, is that...
That is the thing I love about Ico, is you feel like you're playing the story.
Right, and in this game, I feel like it'd be a great film. I would love to see this as L.A. Confidential 2. It would have been awesome. Like, the plot, the story is there, but playing it as a game doesn't quite work, where you're in this cool moment, and then you walk for 4 minutes over to the next piece of evidence, which just breaks the pacing.
Or you get called to a random street crime on the other half of the city, like,
which,
while you're investigating.
That part doesn't make sense.
It wouldn't happen in a movie. You mean mm-hmm. it would, like, jump to, like, everything in a film of this magnitude or of this style, you know, everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Every shot is shown for a specific purpose. And in this game, that's not the case, where you can spend an hour, not really, but like 5 minutes walking around part of a house where there's nothing there. And then all of a sudden you're in this intense interview with somebody and it's just kind of, it's really uneven. And I don't have the answers. I'm not a developer. I think what they did is ambitious, but it missed the mark, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think we should avoid like criticizing too much Team Bondi, because this is one of like the first games like this where it's straddling that line between game and like serious story delivery. And the stuff where you have to do you do the street crimes, it pulls you away from what they actually want you to do with the investigation stuff.
Like, yeah, it's like the game itself, the storyline is sort of like an interactive media. And then when you actually play these random crimes, it's like, oh, this is where the Grand Theft Auto stuff comes in. Mm-hmm. You know, this is where they use the open world, because the game itself doesn't really use the open world to its advantage.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, but the thing is like, and maybe I'm shitting on it, but I actually like the game. There's just elements of the game that bother me. I think that the storyline is really inconsistent. And, you know, some of the animations and some of the character models are really inconsistent. Some of it, I think, is just hilarious where, you know, I can get shit on for hitting a pedestrian, but then my partner, I ask him to drive the car, and he's running people over left, right, and center, and he's just, like, having a ball of a time, doesn't give a shit. Like, some of that is inconsistent. So a lot of that stuff, I like the investigation stuff. I mean, to me, maybe because I love the procedural dramas and stuff, that stuff is really cool to me.
I agree with that too.
Looking around and trying to find that one piece of it. It shouldn't be easy. It's not easy to find the pieces of evidence.
I like L.A. Noir and kind of the same way I liked Heavy Rain. And
I loved Heavy Rain.
And I just compare those two because they're kind of, you know, trying to do the same thing.
I'm super
in different
glad.
Ways, but they are
in different ways. But yeah, but like
they are definitely trying to create an interactive experience that is more than just the game mechanic, but more than also just watching a movie.
Right. You're talking about Heavy Rain playing the story.
That
for me is the driving scene, the highway scene in Heavy Rain was what we should be building to.
Yeah, that was actually really cool. So I mean, I take away honestly from listening to this, so that people don't think we're too negative, that all of you would recommend playing L.A. Noir, it sounds
I'm
like.
I'm super glad the game exists, and it's definitely worthwhile.
And I'm really glad that I got to play it, and I think that people should check it out.
My last criticism of the game is, I think it's interesting, going back to your Heavy Rain point, is I think the way they handle a quote-unquote fail state during interviews is interesting, where it tells you at the end which questions you got wrong. And I don't know.
I really didn't like that, actually.
I don't think they needed to.
Yeah.
Because I would have loved it just to keep. Because it's not as if you get, it puts a little X next to it instead of a check in your, little journal, your question book. And instead of them telling you that, like, the game doesn't stop if you get all the questions wrong. You still go and the game still progresses. And I love that. And I wish they just didn't tell you, like, this was wrong. Let's let the game unfold.
The game is supposed to be so realistic to a certain point. And then when it comes to that element, it's such a video game trope. It's like, it goes back to this idea of, like, we need to tell people what they did right and wrong. It just scratches my itch to go hit reset and start again. It doesn't make me want to see what happens next.
Yeah, let's just keep playing.
It's like, when you play Heavy Rain and you make a mistake, you don't realize it until the story unfolds. This game, it tells you when you make a mistake.
Right.
So I think a lot of people are having these same exact experiences, whereas a lot of this stuff branches apart and you can go
in
different
really ways. Cool stuff by failing, because you have to go talk to a totally different character that you don't discover and you answered all the first questions right in the first time.
I just wish it didn't point out so much when you did something
and
wrong.
And that question wrong chime is just the most infuriating thing.
So this is an interesting point, because it's another place where we see the old sorts of mechanical parts of games that had to be there because we didn't have the sophistication in the on-screen presentation that now are starting to break the immersion in the game. So it's like you're playing the game and you're like doing this interrogation, it sounds like, but then having it intrude with boing, you got it wrong, or boing, you got it right, breaks the atmosphere. So how do you replace it?
I think
just hide it?
Just not have it. Because the game, it's not as if the game stops and you never get a start over screen. Just let me keep going.
I mean, this is the argument in Deus Ex right now, that they've now gone back and said, well, we're going to take the glowy parts out because some people didn't want it. But there's definitely a number of people who also, when they're playing their games, want that confirmation.
Well,
they want to know how many questions they missed so they can get the achievement
for
perfect
questions.
Hit it
at the end of the chapter. I like what they do at the end of the chapter. And I think it was Jeff last week that talked about it, where it gives you like a two, like, had you gone back to the precinct first, you would have discovered so-and-so in the act. And that's cool, because then you're out of the moment. But like, while I'm doing it, don't be like, meow, 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 meow.
I mean, I just also wish, if we're going to go that far with it, then I wish the game wouldn't fail when I'm chasing someone and they get away. I would like to be able to call out an APB and look for this person.
Yeah.
It's a city.
Like, an APB, why can't, reloaded?
There are other cops. There are other, oh man. there are other cops in the city. How come I can't try to find this person? Like, he exists in the city. Why don't I just keep chasing him? So things like that, I think. If you're going to go realistic, go all the way.
All right, so now that you've been like that about it, what's your favorite part of the game, each of you?
I really like the way that Homicide ends, what you find out from the Homicide Division at the end of it. But it ends so abruptly that I was really disappointed with that. But overall, that was my favorite part of it.
Andrew?
There's inconsistency between the facial animation and the body animation, but the face stuff is incredibly important, and going forward, it's going to be huge.
Driving,
it makes such a difference.
Driving through the city is recreated amazingly, what they did, and just listening to your partner talk, take the long way there if you can. What it does, the issues and the subtext it brings up in this game is really good, and the writing that works really well. So enjoy those moments. Don't rush through them.
You know, the other approach to making a cinematic game is what we saw last week at Activision, where they were showing us Modern Warfare 3. And this is a wholly different approach to creating the movie experience in games. And I mean, obviously, it's like comparing Independence Day to Chinatown.
It's war porn.
It is war.
It's what it is.
I'm going
it's glorious
to
war
register warporn.com.
War porn. We got lots of ones. Gunification and war porn. Here's the thing is that the core... enthusiast response to Modern Warfare 3 has been sort of a acceptance that it's going to be huge and it's going to be bombastic and massive, but also a little bit lukewarm. And my conjecture, among other things, is that you start to get worn down by these things, and it's very difficult to bring that next signature piece to it without, I mean, there's kind of, you're caught in this place where you want to like keep doing the same thing. I'm thinking about like the Die Hard movies,
mm-hmm.
and how difficult it was to keep bringing Bruce Willis back and having him be
John McClane. God damn, how could you forget that?
It was here and then it like popped out.
Hudson Hawk.
But without doing the same thing. And like,
oh, Unbreakable.
Wow. That's where the indie movies are a great example, except for 4, because they kept bringing Indiana Jones back in ways that were still engaging. But it's difficult to do, and I think franchises, game or otherwise, struggle with it.
And it seems to me, like watching Modern Warfare, that the response that I got from it is so strongly of, this looks like it's just the same game continuing on for another 10 hours. And I don't know that that's a bad thing per se.
It's because when I was watching this demo with you, like I kind of zoned out into this like state of comfort with it. Like,
there's definitely that.
This is Modern Warfare 3. This is exactly what I expect. It's loud. There's explosions. You're chasing all over the place. I'm gonna play it. I'm gonna enjoy it. But yeah.
Is there a new engine to it? Because Modern Warfare was so amazing, because going from Call of Duty 3 to what Infinity War did with Modern Warfare, graphically, it took it another step.
I think they're still iterating on the same engine. I mean, the funny thing was they introduced it by Infinity Ward's Robert Bowling came out and introduced it. But like after his introduction, he handed the stage over to the head of Sledgehammer Games, who we've learned now basically is doing the heavy lifting, making the game. So, concerns about the crew that left IW seem to have been at least validated by, IW is there. It looks like they're the creative visionaries for the game, but there's going to be other studios making the individual parts
of it. And, Raven is involved somehow?
Sounds like Raven might be on multiplayer if they're involved. I think, sounds like to me, like Sledgehammer's doing the main single player, and then that would make sense that maybe Raven's working on the multiplayer. So here's some of the things I thought were cool. So I started trying to look at, more detailed parts. You remember the part, one of the things I thought was really cool, and I actually looked this up online. These things exist. Remember the flip-up sight that the guy had on his assault rifle?
Yeah.
That was really fucking cool, and no one's done that. So on his assault rifle, over the main part of the body of the weapon, he had an ACOG sight, but it was flopped off to the side of the weapon during normal time. So he's holding it up, and he's just got a plane down the iron sights view, which is great for up close peripheral vision. And then he probably punches a button or whatever. And the dude, his character just gives it a little jostle and the sight kicks up on top. And now he's got a full 4-power ACOG sight. And it was awesome.
That's
cool. Thought that was really, really cool. Yeah. But at the other end of the spectrum, man, the in the pickup truck chasing the train through the underground, London Underground was just, dude, I get where they're going.
That's where the realism comes in, right?
Yeah.
Is that going to be the level where I don't have to fire a bullet?
No, you have to fire bullets. Because there were dudes
be
on the train
in
firing back.
It's automatic. You'll be constantly firing bullets.
It's funny. We were talking a little bit about this in the office, where people online seem to be like, oh, fuck this game and this franchise so hard. And I seem to remember a lot of people thinking the same thing when Black Ops came out. And then a lot of people really enjoy Black Ops.
Oh, yeah.
And best-selling game of all time.
Oh, you're going to love it.
So I think people are really... this is like when they announce a new Halo game. They're like, oh, fuck Halo. And then after everyone bought Halo this week, it's like... Dude, it's like silly to me,
it's
I think.
It's like Cougar Town. No one wants to admit they watch it, but then they love it.
Burn, Jeff. Burn.
All right. Jeff's not here to develop to defend himself, so you know I'm sure I can get in at least two or three more references in the rest of the show. Stick around. Don't go anywhere, because you're going to want to hear all of them. We'll be right back. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. Coming back with the smooth and sexy sounds. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, shows always get better when we got alcohol, which is a proven fact, which I learned also. Yes, yes, yes. We have the beers. We have British beer. We have Mexican beer. We are in great shape. It's not like we have wine, because then it would be Cougar Town if we were all standing around in the kitchen, you know, drinking wine.
Gossiping.
And, yeah. Although the dialogue would be, like, much worse.
Right now, the vein in Jeff's head is getting back to, like, deadly premonition levels. And he's like, oh, you!
Hey, before we get away from Modern Warfare, because it just sounded like we were pooping on it. Like, you know what? It's going to be fun. Like, this is the funny thing. And I think, like, this is the part that come back to, like, what Zav and I were talking about in the office, is that, like, it's easy for us to poke fun at it. But at the same time, there's sort of this, like, implicit, well, you're going to play it, and, like, it's the guilty pleasure, have a blast with it game.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to play the game, and I'm looking forward to playing it. I just think it's funny when people see a name of a game and they immediately start shitting on it right away. It's like, you know, calm down. At least see something for it. I mean, shit on those fucking those America, Europe videos that came out, those like 3 seconds wireframe videos. Those things were like ridiculous. But the game itself, I actually want to see more of it before I start.
I thought the New York part was way better than London, because the New York part really like embodied what the Call of Duty, especially the Modern Warfare games, have gotten right, which is that... Like, they put you on the an edge of your seat pacing very well without pushing it too far all the time. Because I think if you go into, like, super big, like, very intense moments, there has to be, like, a cool-down period mm-hmm. afterwards. And they're very good at, like, keeping you going on this rhythm and pushing you forward without you feeling... I mean, if you stop and assess it, you say, oh, yeah, of course I'm being pushed forward. But if you're in the moment-to-moment of it, it's like you really get into that move forward, and it's because they do little cool things like you come across the next part of a squad and you just naturally start following them around a corner, and you're like, oh, we're not even thinking about it. It's like you're just progressing through the level. It's really that part of the pacing and structure is really well
done. You know
done.
What that level reminded me of? Cloverfield. Like the chaos in New York, on the streets of New York during Cloverfield, when you don't really know exactly what's happening, but you got troops running all over the place and shooting all over the place.
I would buy that. And, of course, you guys didn't have a chance to see it because it's not in the trailer video, but the Predator drone part, although something that we do in those games, is still mm-hmm. really looked really cool.
I thought there was way more interesting, fun-looking stuff in the trailer than in the demos that we saw.
Really? You didn't think the Predator drone thing looked cool?
No, I'm saying, like, all this stuff looked really awesome, but... Was the Predator drone stuff not in the trailer?
No, it's not in the trailer. Oh, okay. Yeah, you don't see that part. Like, all that part where he's, like, flying over and spotting. Yeah. Like, you're like, I'm like, that's kind of freaking really cool. I like that a lot.
I wonder if it's going to be... I feel like this, and actually Modern Warfare 2 and Black Ops, where, like, you get into a new situation, and it's like... the pacing is great, but at the same time, you're like, I'd love to do that, in this example, the Predator drone more. But it's like always pushing you to the next thing. It's like, now you're on a train. Now you're on a Predator drone. Now you're in an F-16.
Well,
now you're in a...
I completely agree with that, because one of the things that I thought about the original one, remember when we were like reviewing it, was like the AC-130 part was so cool.
Awesome.
And right when you got into the flow of it, it's like, oh, I'm taking that away from you again.
And you never go back.
It's like, damn, that was really cool. Can I have more of that, please?
Well, that's what they want to leave you with. Wanting more stuff.
And also, I think that the gameplay is really dictated by the narrative structure of those games now. I mean, everything's really
true.
Based on progressing the story, keep going. So that's, I don't know.
I would say it's more like progressing different locations than actual story. Like, the story is an excuse to go to
I will say,
London,
though, the whole urban warfare thing, I think, is really cool. I think that's good. Having played, you know, the rest of the series, I think it's going to be cool to go into New York and actually have those firefights.
Well, and that was part of what you liked about Crysis 2, right?
Yeah, and no. I mean, a lot of people were like, man, this is exactly like New York. And I was just like, I'm in New York for 5 minutes, and now I'm in a cave. Like, that's how Crysis 2 was to me. Like, Crysis 2 is like, look how beautiful this world is. Now go in a fucking cave and be here for 20 minutes and fight these weird aliens.
You know, I may play that over the long holiday weekend.
I will bet you $50. Huh? I know that there's a shitload of games that you keep saying that you're going to play. I just don't know if that's
I want to stop time and just play
games. What
about
Demon's Souls?
Yeah, I went back to it, and I'm going to actually continue to go back to it. You know what the funny thing I found about Demon's Souls is that now that I got a little bit into it, I don't know if I think that a couple posters are right. I'll probably never finish it. However, I think it's a game I can consistently go back to and play for a little while as long as I don't let myself get worked up about it. Because, man, it is a really fun game to play. It is a really, really fun game to play.
I have it. I haven't played it. I got to check it out.
This problem never ends. I mean, L.A. Noire, 3 discs on Xbox. You know, people are still working their way through that. Infamous 2 is what, next week? It's the 7th or something?
Week of E3. Week of, yeah.
And then there's all of E3, and Microsoft always does a great job of pumping out demos. And then right after that, I mean...
Hunted. Don't forget Hunted.
It's just crazy. You're never going to get through
Duke,
your backlog.
Duke Forever, dude.
And Duke Forever,
Gone
right?
Gold.
Oh, and while we're talking about co-op for a moment, Bowling did note that Spec Ops is coming back for Modern Warfare 3.
Yes, he did.
Which I think is a cool commitment on their part. I'm really curious how many people played Spec Ops for very long in Modern Warfare 2, because it was really, like, I loved the idea of it, and we had a blast playing it. But man, we were done playing Spec Ops in like 2 weeks.
You didn't buy into like the arcade-y... Like run it again. You didn't like that speed runs you saw people doing.
We didn't even get
like
we didn't even get through all the tiers. I mean, I think we went through. There was like Alpha, Bravo, Delta. Whoa, Alpha, Bravo, Delta,
Corona,
Echo. I think that like with the people I played with regularly, we got through about the third tier, which was like Delta. I mean,
they added a lot really to fun. It because it was born out of that one level at the end of Modern Warfare, the original
Mile
one.
High
so,
Club.
Mile High.
Yeah, so I mean, the fact that that entire mode was sort of born out of that one situation that people kept running over and over again, there was quite a few that were included in Modern Warfare 2.
If they can come up with as strong a hook to come back to that as they have with their multiplayer, because let's face it, I mean, Call of Duty's multiplayer hooks in player progression and the way they handle online has become the de facto standard, you know, usurping this plot that Halo had, right? Mm-hmm. So if they could come up with even a half that much attraction to bring people back into Spec Ops, and they had like a really strong...
Like, say maybe a situation where you storm Bin Laden's compound.
How much do you love freedom, motherfucker?
All right. So we get caught up in a lot of titles. You know, one of those things, especially over the summer, that's fun is to get into downloadable titles. And I saw a couple of great downloadable titles last week. One of them was From Dust. And I had seen, if you haven't seen even the trailers of From Dust before, you really should look at them. Ubisoft is publishing the game. And it's so freaking cool if you ever liked, especially Populous. So the idea of this game is that a tribe on a planet is bringing back, it's really hard to express. Basically, you play the essence of their spirituality, of their society, and they like...
You're right, that is hard to express.
It's kind of crazy. At the beginning of the game, the tribe gathers around in a circle and like does this chant thing that calls you into existence, and you're like the breath of the tribe. And so, like, this is very esoteric.
Like ActRaiser?
Like what?
ActRaiser?
What's ActRaiser? I haven't played that.
ActRaiser for Super Nintendo? You are kind of the god?
Oh, you're definitely the god. So you're definitely the god of them.
And the side-scrolling RTS like mashup. Yeah. I remember ActRaiser.
So now you're like this swirly like thought breath of the tribe, and
the swirly thought breath. Oh, you're playing as John Thought Breath. Okay. Okay. Cool. All right. Continue. Sorry.
And you're able to control basically the elements. So you're able to pick up water and pick up dirt and move them around. And later on, you're able to control magma. Later on, you're able to control magma. And it's very simple stuff in that ultimately, most of the time, you're doing something to create a path so that your villagers can get to a next point. And sometimes that point will be a totem for them to gather around and create like a spell for you. Other times it'll be a totem for them to gather around and create a little settlement and encampment. And other times it'll be to get to the entrance to go to the next part of the level. But it's super elegant. It's super pretty. It has this fantastic music in the background. And all you're doing is like re-terraforming the earth to get those paths made. So if your tribe is here on the beach and they need to get up to a totem that's on a hill, but it's past a waterfall, then you have to figure out how to like scoop up some dirt and dam up the waterfall long enough for them to be able to get across. But it's not like you just drop dirt and then the waterfall is dammed, it's actually always procedurally creating what's happening. So if the water's running by, as soon as you start putting dirt down, it starts eroding the dirt. And so you're in this constant like fight of, well, do I take some of the water out of the lake up here and move it so there's less water pressure behind it so it's not pushing the dirt as hard? Or do I mound the dirt over here a little higher? Or do I try and redirect the water? And it was like so super cool the way you were just moving all this stuff around. Again, you bring magma into the equation, and now you can suddenly like let volcanoes erupt, and as the volcanoes erupt, they'll continue to erupt even more and more and more. And as their magma flows down into the water, it starts to create land. So now you're creating, like, you can like let magma flow into places and create land bridges or steam off water or create encapsulated lakes. Like, so much cool stuff just with the simple deal of, yeah, I'm playing around with the world.
Is it a one answer puzzle or multiple solutions to figure these
things out? More of an infinite number of answers. That's because cool. The beginning of each level is just, you know, like, here's the environment and here's where you need to take your tribe next. And they, you know, there'll be like some thought bubbles and they'll tell you like, oh, we need to go over here and get like this totem. Like, one of the early ones they show is like, if you get the tribe over to this one totem, then they can get this, you get this spell that lets you jellyfy water, which is important because not long into that level, a tsunami comes. And you want to jellyfy the water. But once you've jellyfied the water, not only does that freeze the tsunami in space, but now you can, like Jell-O, scoop water out of locations and move it someplace else, and it's, like, semi-solid.
So is it like a Lemmings Patapon situation?
That's a good description. Like, it's very much like
you're
Lemmings.
Moving them from point A to point B by changing the world.
Yeah, yeah. So once the mission starts for the tribe, the little tracer lines for each of the tribe's members will lay out on the planet, and then they'll show you like, well, this is where he's going to try and go to get to the objective, and it'll be like white where he can get to it, and then it'll turn a different. I think it was like. I want to say it was black, or maybe it sounds like it'd be more sensible if it was red. But anyway, it shows you where he's blocked. So like the line would come up to a stream, and if it's low enough he can ford, it would cross the stream in the same color. But if it's too deep or, you know, too swiftly running water, it'll stop and turn a different color. And then you have to figure out, okay, now how do I get him around that? And one of the things that's interesting is you start piling soil in different spots. It is smart enough to pick up that, like, it doesn't necessarily have to path him through that path. If you create an alternate path way over to the right or way to the left, it'll pick that up. And suddenly the lines will start to change. And you'll see it because each tribesman has their own pathing line. You'll see some of them start to flip around into different spots as the AI for each one of those individual tribesmen is trying to figure out, how can I get to that point of objective?
Are they constantly moving like a Lemmings or Echochrome, or can you stop and start? Or are you racing them?
No, they're constantly moving. So once they start, you know, once they see their pathway, they move to as far down that pathway as they can
get.
But
they won't kill themselves?
They won't kill themselves, no. But you can mess them up. Or you can get them into trouble. You know, for instance, if you have them fording a river, and upriver your dam is like not holding and the water's starting to spill around it, they can get washed into that and then like washed out the sea. And yeah, it's kind of sad. Don't die, tribesmen.
It sounds cool though.
It is super cool.
And it looks pretty.
Oh my god! It's like,
Ubisoft's
so
been killing
artistic.
It with downloadable games. The Outland was fantastic, mm-hmm. which I actually finally started to play after Jeff yelled at me.
You did.
It's one of my favorite games of the year, Outland.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Man, God, there's too many damn games.
I think you just won $50.
Yeah.
$150.
You're not going to get
it. Wow, that happened like 5 minutes ago. Are you serious? Wow. I'm going to start post-it notes everywhere.
Post-it notes are evil because then if they fall. The problem with post-it notes is.
Oh, sweet Lord. Are we having this conversation?
Finally, we're having this conversation.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad I'm here for this one.
If they fall underneath the desk, then you've absolutely forgotten it, but you were counting on that post-it note.
Jeff, come back.
I heard 3
You put a post-it note on that post-it note and just to tell it not to put it under the desk. Fuck.
Yes, exactly.
Use them.
So the other awesome downloadable game that's coming this summer is Bastion. And Bastion was. Wasn't it one of the PAX 10?
Yes.
And it is so freaking awesome. And this is like, obviously, you guys know from how much I played Torchlight that I love that sort of action RPG loot fest. This is one of those, super colorful. If you haven't seen the screenshots, go look at the screenshots because they really capture the atmosphere and flavor of it very well. But the different part is there's a narrator telling you the entire story as it's unfolding. The kid got out of bed. It was a different day. He was running to the bastion where they were all going to meet. And it's like you're moving through.
He moved his left leg. He moved his right leg.
He began to uninstall the game.
No, dude. Like you see, I understand that talking about it, it sounds like I'm not sure that
He's
I really.
Talking about the games.
Andrew
still
said,
talking about. He's giving me an evil look because I keep talking.
What are we, two?
Yes.
On this show, yeah.
Yeah, we are too. That's true. Two-year-olds with beers. That's right there. Like, we're going to get picked up and put in jail.
So, is Microsoft Game Studios publishing this game? Wasn't there something that...
Bastion? No, Warner Brothers is.
Warner Brothers? Okay. This is the game
that had, like, the two guys in San Jose that were building out of the garage. And it just is... It's so cool. And
so it's
you doubt me, but I mean, I sat there with Jeff Gerstmann playing this game, and we were just like, we were totally transfixed by it. It's so cool to have like this guy telling like it makes it so engaging. You played so many of these games where you're like, ick it with the sword. Mm-hmm. Oh, it drops some stuff. Right. Now I got some more things. Having someone like just non-ironically going, he came to my brewery and picked out a fine ale to restore his health.
And this is always happening as you're like playing through the world.
As you're playing through the world.
Is it supposed to be funny or is it supposed to be this dry?
Well, no,
serious?
It's lighthearted. No, it's lighthearted. I mean, obviously, it's not supposed to be slapstick silly.
Okay.
It's like not comedic, but it's...
But it's fun.
It's fun.
It's like really fun and engaging, and I can't tell you how cool it is to get into it. Like, especially like when you get to the boss fights and he's like describing, it's very dangerous to walk through the razor grass. As you're like walking through the razor grass. It's like really, it's super atmospheric and it gets you into it. I think that it would be, it might hold back the replayability of it.
Oh, okay.
You know, because like a lot of times these loot games, you're like, oh, I'm going to go back and play it again. And like, I could see where, you know.
I don't know, maybe would you be able to disable that on a second playthrough, maybe?
I don't know.
My concern would be even on...
It's called the mute button.
Right.
On a first playthrough is just repetition. I know we've come farther with voice and how much voice data games can have. But, I mean, I'm thinking back to early sports games where you're just like, shut up, John Madden. You have said this 15 times. I just don't want to hear it anymore.
So we didn't encounter that. But the trade-off for that is that it does require the game to be very linear. So a lot of times in these dungeon crawls now we see that the games are much more branching-oriented. If you've seen... We just had a story about Torchlight 2 and the way they're changing the map development on Torchlight 2. And Torchlight 1 was similarly very linear, but in Torchlight 2, they're going for this very branching, explorable map area. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be less of that sort because to have that narrative flow, obviously, they have to have a pretty good idea where you're going next. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can't be telling you about the two giant blueberries you're fighting if you're not fighting the two giant blueberries yet.
But how cool is it that this is a downloadable? I mean, coming from games, you know, we're too human. Similar loop, but $60 game or whatever, and now this with all this voice recording and everything, you're just going to be able to go download. That's awesome.
Cool weapons, lots of you know, oftentimes in these games, it's all about just the monsters you fight, but one thing they do a lot of here are a lot of traps and environmental weapons. So there's like, you know, flowers that shoot little dagger petals at you and lots of cannonades and different things that are firing at you from different spots.
Oh, so that's cool, because I guess my fear would be that would be its gimmick, where it just narrates everything that I'm doing and it's just, at its essence, a Torchlight clone or something. But it sounds like there's more to it than that, right?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely more to it. And actually, it's a very interesting ongoing story of when you start out, as you're running through the world, the world is sort of growing right in front of you with blocks falling down out of this heavens to lay down the pathway that you're on. Okay. And if you watch like some of the video that's out there, as you get later on into the game, you start to... So you're building up this hub world, and some of the worlds you go to, you have to go and take like the stone from them. And once you take the stone from them, then the reverse starts to happen and the world starts to crumble and you have to get out of it. But then once you get back to like your hub world, you're able to build different service buildings around your hub world that help you power up your... Like, there's a lot going on here. It's not a shout. It's not like a throwaway game. It's just narration.
I think it's amazing that this is made by like two people.
It's kind of fucking
in
unreal.
Garage, you
it's
know what
kinda
I mean?
Unreal. Yeah, it's kind of unreal. It's amazing to see like what, you know, some guys who are really passionate about it can get in there and do. This is what's really cool about having access through downloadable systems. And it's a shame that I like the Pixel Junk guys. I've been listening to them. They've really been struggling with how do we deal with not having income for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
That's a really tough spot. Like if you've gotten reliant on that. I mean, if you're platform specific. Now, a lot of these guys aren't platform specific, but if you're platform specific, it's really tough. So it's interesting that, like, you know, even 3 years ago, that wouldn't have been anything. No one would have cared. Now it's like this huge deal. If you have a huge team, though, you can make a pretty fantastic game. And there's some folks up in Boston, including former 1UP Yours alumnus, Mr. Sean Elliott, who evidently did a good bit of the combat design in the BioShock Infinite demo.
Well done, Sean. Well done.
Sean, dude, better than well done. That game
freaking blew me away. Just unbelievably blew me away.
Describe it.
So
slowly.
I don't know. I'm pretty excited. Pretty excited.
Make me feel it.
So, yeah. BioShock Infinite, yeah. Baby.
Now I'm creeped out. All right.
It's the turn of the 20th century.
Can I get some like jazz tunes just to undercut this? No?
It's
right.
About 1910.
I feel like I'm back in L.A. Noir now.
There you go.
Twin Peaks.
You know what? Actually, I was back in the middle of Tex Murphy, Under the Killing Moon. You remember that? Remember that? You don't remember that, do you?
People are screaming, tell us about BioShock.
So BioShock, so I think what's really interesting about what Irrational Games has done is that in BioShock, they created this utopia gone wrong in Rapture, but you came in after it had all finished. And one of the things that Ken told us right off the bat when he was describing, you know, what was cool about Infinite is that they're bringing us into a society that's in the process of tearing itself apart. And over the course of the game, we get to learn a lot more about why it's tearing itself apart and what's happening. The one thing that, like, I'm interested to know how the fiction's going to work out is that so the game takes place in the early 1900s, and it takes place on in the fictional cloud city of Columbia. And it's very interesting, how do you figure that, like, in the 1900s, society, you know, this like smart people or whatever figured out how to build cities in the sky.
Booming industrialists.
And its hook for powers, if you haven't followed this before, is something that they're calling Vigors. And the Vigors are based off of the old idea of the snake oil salesman. And what if that snake oil was real and it worked? So whatever you like, you know, like, hey, Sonny, what would you like to do today? Well, you just take some of this tonic and you'll be set. If those tonics actually worked, then that's the idea of Vigors. The story goes that you are a down on his luck guy named
Booker DeWitt. He's a Pinkerton.
Yes. And Booker gets approached to go and rescue this nebulous Elizabeth person. So Elizabeth is held captive in a tower, very Cinderella or Rapunzel. Very Rapunzel like, on Columbia. And she's being held there by this creature known as the Songbird. And the song.
You should also go back to just quickly say that this was sort of Columbia is created, and it's sort of American exceptionalism where
it's absolutely
the whole society is created
right.
to show off what America can do, and then one day it disappears into the clouds and no one knows that it exists anymore.
Yeah, it's very much almost like a World's Fair sort of thing. It's right. like mm-hmm. here's the greatness of America, and so you find out how to get to Columbia, and you make your way to Columbia, and the demo picked up about a third of the way into the game. Where Booker has managed to rescue Elizabeth and starts looking around the world. And one of the things that is easy to lose track of because of all of the interesting story things we get caught up in is that BioShock is at its heart a shooter. And it's very much a shooter. And one of the things that came out not long into this is that, oh, that's right. This is a shooter and the action's going to be a big, big part of it. Now, we've seen that Elizabeth has powers. And her powers are sort of... We didn't really know what to make of them at first, but as it turns out, they're pretty standard sci-fi stuff. It's that old space-time continuum thing. And throughout Columbia, rifts have formed. And these rifts are visible to everybody, but Elizabeth can manipulate them. And they show her, like, how she's not learned herself very well very early on by... She comes to this horse that's fallen, and she's, like, really sad. She wants to save the horse. There's a rift there. So she tries to open the rift and save the horse, and it, like, starts to open.
No, I wouldn't try that if I were you. She's like, no, I wouldn't want to.
She's like, I don't think that's a good idea. So she, like, gives it a shot, doesn't open. She gives it another shot, doesn't open. She, like, strains really hard, and suddenly, like, oh, man. Suddenly they are sitting in the middle of a street in front of a theater in the mid-'80s. With the Empire Strikes Back.
Revenge of the Jedi.
And Tears for Fears playing in the background. I'm like...
And it shows up for like 3 seconds and the terror like folds and yep. That's it. Like, what?
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 Like, tell me there's more of that. Tell me there is more of that because that was crazy awesome. That was absolutely crazy awesome. So that, I think, though, was sort of a device to show that she has to use her powers judiciously. And it becomes a metered thing as part of a game system in that when they're in combat, there will be rifts around. And when appropriate, she'll be able to afford Booker different combat options. And he can, like, point to a rift and say, use that one. So the way they showed this off is they get in this courtyard and they're surrounded. They got some guys up and to their left that's at a high perch that have the high ground on them. And there's some guys coming at them from the right on
the
ground
level. There's
a blimp
attacking as well.
Well, the blimp comes in just a second. Because the first thing
Spoil.
It's a Zeppelin anyway. Because the first thing he did was he showed off, okay, so I'm here, I'm in this courtyard. I can open a rift in front of me because there was one right in front of me. And that would call in like this giant building. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a building. It was something weird. It's like a structure of some sort.
Yeah, some sort of structure.
Like maybe a bandstand or something. But anyway, something they could call in and use that as cover. So they could call that in, take cover, not get fired on so much. He could also call in a weapons crate next to him, which Ken explained if he had used this one, that it had like a heavy rocket launcher and some other gun in it, so you could kind of shot your way out of the situation. And then over to your right and behind you was another rift, and this one would have opened a whole other alternate pathway for them to sort of escape and evade and maybe flank their opponents.
So how do you know it does that? Would you have to open it to look to see what's in there?
Or ghosts. So it like does a little ghosting of what's going to come through. So like when he hovered over the rift in front of him, you could kind of see a ghosted outline of what the bandstand cover thing was going to be.
Every time you say bandstand, I'm thinking of Dick Clark's.
American Bandstand. Top 40 sounds.
Here, Dick, annoy these people for a while. I'm going to book it out of here. All right.
But, that would be funny.
I don't know. That when I saw it, it didn't have any of this. And it already looked good. Now
oh,
it
this
sounds
is sick.
Like
this
you know,
is sick.
And you haven't even started describing the skyline.
And then it gets batshit insane. So he calls in the cover, and like they take cover behind that. He starts picking off some of the guys on the high ground, and then this blimp shows up, and the blimp is launching like guided rockets down on them. And Elizabeth is like, "That's going to be a problem. We're going to have to deal with it." So they fight their way up onto the high ground where there's another rift, and that rift ghosts a rocket launcher, like an air ground-to-air rocket launcher. And she's like, "Oh, I can't open it right now." So this is where you like get to see your first glimpse of the meter system. She doesn't have enough power yet. And Ken says, like, one of the things you could do is you could hold out here tactically and defend this location until she built up enough power, have her call in the rocket launcher and blow the Zeppelin out of the sky. Of course, he doesn't want to do that because he's got something else to show off. He runs over to the edge of this catwalk, jumps, throws up this like glaive looking attachment, latches it onto the skylines, and starts
whoosh,
whoosh. And suddenly like Booker is like riding the Batman roller coaster where you're like hanging underneath the rail, flying through Columbia with dudes flying at him at the same time, everyone with guns firing at each other, and it's batshit insane.
And he's jumping from rail to rail. Like
that's
not,
that
was
crazy.
The most amazing part to me.
Yeah, and so one thing I ask about, because I asked him, like, that looked really hard. I was talking to Tim Gerritsen about that, who's their, studio director or something.
Yeah, I think it's production design.
Production.
Lead.
Anyway, sure. So they've worked really hard on that. Did you see the little cursor?
Yeah, yeah.
So the little cursor, it has this, like, little ghosted cursor that you can just tap, and it'll tap between lines and lets you jump pretty fluidly from line to line to line.
So you don't really have to worry about lining up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they were like, you know what, they had fiddled with it, and it wasn't, they wanted it to be fun. They didn't want it to be.
There'd be so many falling deaths that.
That's what Infamous One did so well was that, autopilot. Not autopilot, but you don't miss your jump. You get to what you want to do and you keep having the fun stuff happen.
So he jumps and jumps and jumps from skyline to skyline to skyline to skyline, gets up to the blimp, fights his way into the blimp, destroys, kills all the guys inside the blimp, sets it on fire, blows it up, jumps out of the blimp. And this is the other cool part about the Skylines is that they made it to where they didn't want you just jumping around and dying to falling to your death. Because it is like, obviously, if you're up in the air, it would have been boring to die, fall to your death all the time. hits a Skyline, zips back around to Elizabeth, and then the Songbird shows up at the end of the demo. And this was really cool because now, after all of that heavy action, they bring back all the character part. And the Songbird is huge. I mean, he's able to like just pretty much stomp Booker. But at the end of this, and I mean, if you don't want to hear any more, like this part's really kind of spoilery. Elizabeth bargains with the Songbird for Booker's life in exchange for her going back to the tower. And I immediately thought, you know what? There's going to be some way down the road that you're going to be able to like convince the Songbird to help you. Because the Songbird's looking out for Elizabeth.
Yeah, like if the Songbird witnesses you saving Liz.
Yeah, yeah. There's going to be something.
I can see that, yeah.
There's going to be something going on there. Anyway. Most amazing game. So freaking amazing. Like, just totally blew me away. Totally. I'm like so excited just talking about it. I could, like, just, I don't know.
Yeah, people should check out your preview on Shaq News. We also have the, there's a 9-minute demo video that they released beforehand that you actually get a glimpse of the Songbird at the end, which is a giant gargantuan.
It's a really weird thing.
Crow thing. So people should check that out on Shaq News and so they can read up a little bit more about what you thought of it.
I'm pretty excited, as you might have been able to
tell.
You're beaming.
Not a lot of things make me quiet, and that made me quiet.
Aww.
I am really looking forward to it. It looked awesome when I saw it like a year and a half ago.
That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
All right, well, we'll try not to make you wait that long while we take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we will see if we have any other games to wrap up, and we also have your seminal game moments, as well as these guys. Stick around. We'll be right back with that.
The real star of the show today would be our big guest. That would be Mr. Todd Curtis from Indiana. Todd Curtis.
Well, you should explain. He's our Play for Japan winner.
Todd Curtis.
He's our Play for Japan winner.
Your voice.
Thank you so much. It is awesome to be here on the show, not just with Todd Curtis.
These are awesome, guys. Check them out. All right. Back to you.
Okay. Today's finishing move.
Let's be honest. We all know that I shouldn't have done that.
The real star of the show today, that would be Mr. Todd Curtis from Indiana.
Back to you.
Wow. You have outdone yourself again, Del Rio.
Indie games. Look at some indie games.
Can we just tell Jeff to go game flap himself?
Yes.
I'm turning it into a negative.
So before we go away from games, a couple other games that I saw last week that you might be interested in. One that I was very curious about as an old-time, long-time, real-time strategy fan. It was End of Nations, which is Petroglyph, which is the old Westwood guys out of Vegas. And it's an interesting game. I'm really curious to see whether it can pull people back to real-time strategy, because in a nutshell, it takes the idea of an MMO and an MMO raid and turns it into a real-time strategy game. So you get together with a group of 10, 20, I think they said it goes up to like 50 players on a side and go comp stomp in a real-time strategy game. So instead of just controlling one character, you're controlling like multiple units with call-ins. You know, like I might have like the armory bay so I can call down a structure that'll help rearm and rearmor everybody in a radius on my team. Really cool. It was very fun. This is just, you know, big time, real time strategy comp stomp thing. It's kind of cool.
Cool.
The answer to your question is no. It will not get people back into real time strategy.
It might.
No, it won't.
It's fun.
I'm sure it is. But Modern Warfare 3 is coming out. Uncharted 3 is coming. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like those games have such a great niche that love them and support them. But everybody tries to be like Halo Wars sold really well, but you don't have legions of new RTS fans because of it.
No.
I just feel like, unfortunately for that genre, that, you know, you're never.
This thing's
have
super approachable. It's done like Ground Control, where you have a, you know, tactical call-ins. It's not like a base building game. You can drop like a repair bay and things like that to help your team out, but it's not. It's
like
not
an action RTS.
It's like an action RTS where you play with a group of other people on a persistent server world. So it's like it's got a lot of cool things going on with it.
It's a lot of hats to be wearing for one game,
dude. It's not a lot of hats. It's one hat. It's a beautiful hat.
It's a big ass hat.
It's a beautiful ornate hat with a peacock feather.
10 gallon.
All right. How about Reckoning? You guys seen that?
I saw that.
Kingdom of
Amalur.
Amalur. Yeah. And what'd you think of it?
Shit. It was a long time ago. What did I think of it? I thought that it looked kind of interesting. The thing that they really are focused when they shut this game off a while ago, I think it was the first actual in-game demo that they've shown off, mm-hmm. when they showed it at PAX, or was it PAX or GDC?
I think it was GDC.
That they're really focused on, it's this one button combat where you kind of do these combos off this one button combat stuff, and I thought that was interesting. But I mean, it was also sounds exactly like Fable 2. Fable kind of did the same kind of thing, and I liked Fable 2 for that. I think that the world seems really interesting. It depends on who you ask. Some people talk about how the story is the most important part of it. Some people talk about how the gameplay is the most important part of it.
You got that weird mixed message too, then.
Yeah, I mean, like, when you talk to you know, Salvatore is doing this, who created the world, this 10,000-year war stuff, and everyone is really amped up about that. Then you talk to Ken Rolston, and it's the gameplay is the core element behind it, and the audience...
Not just the gameplay, the combat. Like
the combat,
is,
yeah.
He is super into the combat thing.
I do think that there's a lot of really cool things. One thing that they showed off that I thought was cool was the whole mage, how you want to play as this mage. It's not this one... You know, this one character who can only do one thing, really. It's he has those glaive things, and, you know, he has some really good mechanics behind him. Every single character is very different in the way that you customize them and decide how you want to branch off their abilities. That stuff looks really interesting. But that was how it looked at GDC. You saw something that was a lot newer, didn't you?
Yeah, so they took us into one of the cities, and they showed off a thief. So one of the things they showed was like this pickpocketing thing, which was kind of cool. It was like illustrating the awareness of different people, of the NPCs. And so he goes and pickpockets this person, and he's like, now after I pickpocket them, I do have to, you know, be careful about how I move away from them and get some distance, because while they may not detect me pickpocketing them, at some point in time, they're going to reach for their coin purse and realize... Wow.
Too easy. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Wow. Really?
We've had beer.
We've had a couple. No. All right. Go ahead.
You know, they're going to like, you know, reach for the coin purse and jingle it around a little bit.
No. But I mean, like, no? Every single no? time, like, no? It's not like I walk down the street and I keep touching my back.
I get that. I don't get that joke, but you get that joke.
You did it twice.
You did it. Yeah.
I didn't do it the first time. You did it the first time. Then I was trying to come
the first
back
time
to it.
It's a joke.
You guys are just piling on now. I mean, come on.
It's like, yeah. Damn. You remember that dead horse that Elizabeth tried to save? She's going to come in here and try to revive this one.
Damn.
Every time does it do that? Like every single time you pickpocket someone? It's like I don't walk down the street and keep touching my back pocket to make sure no one's, you know, stole my wallet.
No, it's an awareness thing. It's an awareness thing. So it's also depends on...
So you shouldn't run away from someone screaming, so long, sucker!
It seemed like that came into play as well.
I do that wrong all the time.
They also showed off like the internal judicial system where if you were to get caught, you could buy your way out.
With their money?
You could fight your way out. Yes.
That's funny, yeah.
Or if you wanted to, you could go to jail and then try, if you were like a thief, you could try and, you know, steal the keys from the jail cell or try and break out in different ways. So they're trying very much to get that interactive world. But then the other big thing they showed was they just showed more combat. And really? That was the emphasis. It really, really looked to me like Fable, where it was very much, you know, focused on rhythm and movement and interaction with the environment and having this like very quick flow, you know, getting that, you know, that very... ballet of combat thing going.
I will say this, that every time they show it, and everyone will tell you the same thing when you talk to them that is on that team, they always talk about how, because Todd McFarlane was a part of making those animations, everything is very grand when you execute magic. Like there's this huge buildup and like there's an execution of this magic being, you know, thrust out of your body. That stuff looks really cool.
Ken's thing, and I don't know that I completely agree that no one has gotten it right, but his thing that he harps on them getting right is movement control and animation of the character, so that the character moves the way you would expect them to, moves fluidly and responds to the stick inputs the way that you would expect them to, without it being bogged down and, oh well, I'm caught in between animations and the game doesn't know what to do.
I think that's key, because Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, I mean, even on, you know, previous gen, at GameCube, PS2, Xbox, whatever, the animations in that were great, but once you started something, you were kind of stuck. You were in that fluid, it was always the jumping over them in combat, and you start that, and then some other guy would come at you, and you're like, oh, well, shit.
Yeah. You know, Prince of Persia was definitely one of those games that, for me, would fall into that category like Todd was talking about, of games where we saw, wow, how far has gaming come? Things that have blown you away. That would be a great example of it. And you guys out there, listeners, obviously really like Todd's question, so I'll give you some of your responses, and then we're also going to get like these guys engaged in it. Camp Kusagi got the thread going. He said, Todd threw in such an excellent warning question last week that I just can't resist throwing in my thoughts on it as well. If ever there was a moment in gaming that blew me away with how far we've come, it was back in the mid-90s, standing in line at Toys R Us for that first glimpse of Mario 64 in the demo section.
Took mine. That's exactly what mine is.
Well, we can talk about. I think we could talk about Mario 64 for a minute.
In Toys R Us as well.
Oh, really?
Same story. Exact same story.
You were in line behind him.
Yep.
Well, let me finish the story. Let's see if you guys sync up on this.
Sweaty controller, man.
I was one of those kids. I was one of those kids who never actually made it into the castle before being told to let someone else have a turn, because just the sheer act of running around in the courtyard was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. but I could pin it down even more specifically than that. I distinctly remember running along the drawbridge, heading towards the door, and then spontaneously deciding to jump off the bridge into the moat just to see what would happen, assuming that I'd either die or brush up against an invisible wall. And to my absolute surprise, Mario hopped into the moat and started swimming.
That's awesome and sad, because I bet that this listener or commenter, and like all of us here, we've lost that.
How do you mean?
Like, when is the last time? I feel like games are constantly progressing now, that now I'm like, BioShock Infinite sounds awesome. L.A. Noire is awesome. And all I did is talk shit about it for 20. I'm not like, oh my God, the facial animations. I'm like,
well, that's just because you're a prick.
No, true. Takes one to know one. I'm not going to get into a pissing match with you.
Takes one to know one. Oh, yeah?
Now
no, your mom. Saying,
now we're missing Jeff's positive energy. Now I need him to smile at us.
I love loving things.
I should pull up his Twitter image or something.
But to come back to your point, do you really think that we are to a point where we might not see those moments, might not have those epiphanies?
I think the progression is happening so much faster that it's harder to appreciate. I think a lot of our culture has moved into what's the next best thing, what's the next greatest thing. We're always looking for that next thing, and it's hard to be satisfied with what we have. The 3DS is amazing, what this thing does.
Right.
Is it?
I think so. You're proving my point now. You're fucking proving my point.
I know what you're saying. It's like technology has come to a certain point where it's like, yeah, that game looks really pretty, but it doesn't look all that much different from what we already have right now. I mean, there's only so far technology can keep going. I mean, that's why I think L.A. Noire makes it so cool, because it has those facial animations that are directly tied to those actors and those performances. That stuff is really, really cool. But, I mean, a game that comes out 3 years from now that uses that same technology is not going to wow you, because you've seen this all before.
But 3 years from now, there's going to be another game that has a new feature similar to the faces.
Right.
It's just like everything will catch up to the faces, but at that point, there'll be something new to catch up to.
Christian, yeah. I've postulated before, though, that maybe it's just the evolution of gaming. So much of gaming has been about the evolution of the technology. So, you know, among the many things that came up, one of the ones that came up in the thread, and I don't know whether I put it down here, was like the first time someone bought a 3DFX card.
Like, oh, I bet, yeah.
Like, that was a, like, amazing mega jump of gaming technology. Like, you bought a 3DFX card, and suddenly all this world was open. And, like, all the world that we take for granted of textured polygons, that was, like, the day that it dawned. And suddenly, we weren't on Build Engine anymore. We were in the Quake world.
Yeah.
And it was all whole new ball game. But how many tech epiphanies are there? I mean, how many more tech crazy, like, it doesn't have to be tech driven.
Well, that's right. I'd love to sit, if I could open up, you know, a Vortex or whatever from BioShock Infinite and talk to someone who's 10 now and see what theirs is. Because I feel like for us and a lot of our generation and a lot of the readers, you know, it was those tech things. But I'd be curious to see, you know, what was that thing for the kid right now that grew up on Xbox 360, like, what was that thing that punched him in the face? And like, holy crap.
Could this, L.A. Noire be it? Could L.A. Noire
be sure
that?
It will be for some, from a lot of people.
But yeah.
I'm really anxious to play, because I think that like the things that, you know, how far have we come? Whatever the argument might be about games such as L.A. Noire or Heavy Rain, the fact that we can have that discussion even about, like, I'm having an immersive narrative experience through that's conveyed to me through a controller in a game versus watching a movie or watching a television show, that's a pretty huge jump in itself. It's hard to, like, nail it down. It's hard to say, like, the same point of pinpoint accuracy of, like, the day the 3DFX card came
out.
Right.
I think, I mean, if you look at something like, you know, the Nintendo Wii, it got to a certain point where technology got to, you know, such a height that it didn't matter what the next game looked like. There was this evolution of technology that's sort of at its peak at this moment, right, in terms of our technology. And now people are trying to escalate their use of creativity and how they're making the games and the gameplay. And I think, you know, kudos to Nintendo for deciding to not compete with Sony and Microsoft in terms of the technology space and create something that was completely their own, something that was completely different. The 3DS is their own too. It obviously takes, you know, things that they've learned from the original DS. But even when that came out, people were like, what is this? How is this going to work? You know, look at iPhone, look at iPad, look at Android.
Absolutely.
All of these devices are creating. It's not how good the game looks anymore. It's about how creative the developers are in order to make their games.
And I think that was one of the things that shone about Mario 64, was that we'd seen 3D environments, but here was the classic 2D formula taken and exploded into a 3D world, and with these great aha moments, like, I just jumped off a bridge. Anytime I did that in Mario, I fell to my death. Mm-hmm. Wait, now I'm in the lagoon swimming? I mean, I totally get where he's coming from with that. And Andrew, you said you were going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
What was your take on it?
On Mario?
Yeah.
It's pretty similar.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I drove to Toys R Us a couple days, like, multiple times, just to play the same demo again, because I was blown away by it. And
the first level,
like, when you realize it's not 2D Mario mechanics anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And your brain is like, wait, what is this? What am I doing here? But it's still that same kind of area of the brain it taps into, because it's the same designers. They figured it out how to translate it.
That game is so amazing on a lot of different levels, because it taps into this nostalgia that you have for, like, I know this character, I know this world, I know these people, but I completely have no idea what's going on at all.
And
it's,
I love
it. It's totally new, and it's totally fresh. And that's, what I think is amazing about that game.
The power of 3D certainly comes up a lot, and maybe that could definitely, Christian, be a product of our generation. You know, like, when we were talking about this last week, one of the things that sprung to mind to me was Virtua Fighter. Because, you know, that was such a huge change in the dynamic of fighting games from, you know, like, where we had been facing off, and it had been a matter of, you know, my attack versus your attack, and you knew all the attacks, you knew what levels they hit at, and it was very...
X-axis, Y-axis.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden now I'm moving around, and I'm throwing people over me, but they're, like, coming over me in different 3D ways, and, like, all the sides of, like, right and left attacks and circling, and, like, whoa, what the hell happened?
Mm-hmm.
It was completely crazy. Totally changed things.
Mine's kind of... I have two. Well, one is tech-related, similar to Virtua Fighter, and the other is a little different. But the tech one was, I remember when I got my Sega Saturn, and that just blew me away, because for me, that was the first point where I was like, I'm playing arcades. Like, the arcade graphic home difference was gone with that. And that just blew me away. Like, I'm playing Virtua Fighter, and then Virtua Fighter 2, and the games that could push out started killing arcades. The one that's not tech-related, the first, like, amazing moment I had in a long time was Metal Gear Solid, playing it. That was the first game. I've always loved games, but that was the first game in a long time where I would get up early before school to play a little bit more. And, like, the way that the narrative and the story roped me in from the first demo disc to getting the game, I was like, I got to see what happens to Snake. And it kept pushing that. And it was like, you know, reading a novel, and I just couldn't put it down. And
that scene in the cell with the DARPA chief having the heart attack and the dual shock, which was new at that time, like, vibrating with the, like,
It combined tech and story so well when Psycho Mantis is reading your game.
Card,
my God.
That was freaking crazy.
That game
that was absolutely crazy. So it's interesting to me, because I think I sort of have a rep, and it's sort of earned, of not being the hugest Metal Gear fan. And it's ironic, because I would absolutely have to say that Metal Gear was definitely the dawning of me realizing how much games are going to be, like, the core of my fiction narrative entertainment going forward. My friend Kynan Pearson, who worked with me at the game store, we got in the demo disc for Metal Gear. Remember the Metal Gear Solid demo
mm-hmm.
disc?
Mm-hmm.
And I bet we played that thing through 24 times and just utterly amazed by it. Like, just watching the beginning of it in the intro scene, in the submarine, approaching Shadow Moses, you're like, wait, this is a game?
Mm-hmm.
What is this?
The atmosphere in that game, especially the opening, was just so incredible. Like, you felt cold playing.
Yeah, you did. That's a good point. You really did. It was, like, so amazingly, like, you just got pulled into it so much. All right, let's give another listener one here. We have Cruel Legacies. The moment for him is, there's this moment in San Andreas. This one takes a minute, so hang with me. There's a moment in San Andreas that will forever be burned into my memory as one of those "the future is now" moments. About two-thirds of the way into the game, there's a mission that involves driving a motorcycle onto the back of a freight plane as it's taking off. Once you're on the plane, you need to take out some security guards, steal a package, and then plant a bomb. I remember completing the mission and expecting to see CJ parachute out of the plane in a cutscene, so when I walked CJ to the back of the plane and jumped out in real time, I was shocked, to say the least. I remember thinking, there's no way I'm going to get to control him all the way down to the ground, but that's exactly what happened. I was so blown away, I would spend hours just flying airplanes up as high as I could, parachuting out, and trying to see how far I could travel by slowly floating down to Earth.
My biggest pet peeve in games right now is the cutscene where you should be playing it.
Yeah.
Like, why didn't you design that? And I'm sure there are valid reasons for it, but when it's clear, like, you're showing me the most awesome parts of the game, and I have my controller on my lap. Like,
or, like, when they turn that cutscene into QuickTime events, and it's like, why can't you just make this into a playable section? Mine, if we're going to continue, is a little weird because when I grew up, my family didn't have a lot of money, so we couldn't afford video game systems. And I remember saving as much money as I could and would buy strategy guides just to read the games, like read through them. And when I finally got a Super Nintendo years later and played through Chrono Trigger, one thing that I love about that game that you're seeing in games still to this day is this idea of choice where, you know, you bump into this character and you can check on her first or grab her pendant, and based on your decisions and what you do and how you react to her later on when you're on trial, these decisions come back to haunt you.
Oh man, that blew me away. Yeah. I'm just remembering that blew
so
me
like
away
things like that. It was just like you're seeing that in games now, like you make choices and they matter later. I mean, this is a Super Nintendo game that came out in 1995. I mean, like, this is something that to this day we're seeing, and I remember playing that finally after reading about it so much and just being completely blown away by that. I love Chrono Trigger, is one of my favorite games of all time. I love that game.
Agreed.
And then there's like 14 endings.
Why are you smirking at me?
You buy it?
Because he owns it 9 times.
I was told that I was foolish to buy it on the Wii and that I should go back and try and play it on my DS.
You're not foolish.
Well, the original
version.
That's the Super Nintendo version. There's no animated cutscenes. There's none of that stuff. That's the original SNES version.
It's pure.
Yeah.
So not that the DS one is bad or anything, but...
You guys like that idea. The idea that appealed to me, and the reason I thought that might make more sense, and maybe I will go back and buy it now, is that I see myself more sitting on my couch and popping my feet up and just enjoying it.
It's a great couch game.
Yeah.
It's just a great... Just fucking play it, dude.
Yeah,
it's
just play
good.
It, dude.
Just play it.
Much as I like Chrono Cross, which everyone is like, you like Chrono Cross, but you haven't played Chrono Trigger? What's wrong with you?
That's probably when you like Chrono Cross so
I
much.
Sold...
no, seriously.
It pained me a little bit to hear Todd talk about all of his games that he owns, because I sold all of my game collections coming down here to afford, like, things to sleep on, for example. And... that sounded really weird, actually, now that I think about it. And but one of the only PlayStation 1 games that I kept was Chrono Cross, because I actually love Chrono Cross.
Man, one of my greatest regrets was 1996 or so, when I was still in the game business, and this kid came in and traded in a mint condition Super Nintendo with every Square game new in the box with every manual and map.
Holy crap.
And you gave him $5.
No.
Well, the store gave him $5.
The store gave him a fine deal or whatever. And I was sitting there looking at it, and I was going to buy it, and I was going to buy it. And then I decided, I don't know what I'm ever going to do with this. So I'm just going to...
You don't know heartbreak until you start packaging up those Super Nintendo games and sending them to some guy who bought them for...
If I could go back to, you know, 15 years ago me... 15 years ago me, get your shit together.
If you had a dead horse to create a time rift.
Yes. I'd go back to 15 years ago me and go like...
It's no longer if I had a time machine, it's if I had a dead horse in front of me.
If I had a dead horse in front of me, I would beat the thing. I would beat the fuck out of it. Oh, goodness. What other... You know, it is weird. Like, I have a lot of other ones. I could do this. I love this question. Mm-hmm. I really love this question. Another one that... like, because it brings back great memories,
yeah, the
too.
More you think about it, the more it's like, oh, wait, yeah.
I remember living... in an apartment back in Houston, and my next door neighbor was also a gamer. His name is Jim, and Jim and I would hang out. We did all kinds of crazy shit, but like among other things was we both liked Command and Conquer, and this was of the era that online multiplayer was like infancy, and there were like these two services. There was the Total Entertainment Network, which mm-hmm. was 10, and then there was M-Wave, and both of them had Red Alert, and we wound up playing more on 10 because 10 would work better. But like, I would sit in my extra bedroom, and he would sit in his extra bedroom, which happened to have a common wall between them, and we would play Red Alert, and then, like, we'd, like, call each other on the phone. When we weren't calling, like, even, like, we wouldn't be sitting there talking on the phone the whole time, because we didn't have voice chat back then. Of course, you didn't have voice chat. We'd, like, bang on the walls at each other, like, especially, like, if you got a win, it'd be like, yeah! And we'd be like, what the fuck? I'm sure our upstairs neighbors are like, what the fuck is wrong with these people, or why do they keep banging on the walls? And then we were like, especially like if it got really good, like we'd have a big battle, and like it would be like a race around to our front doors to see like who was gonna get there first and go like, I got you, motherfucker.
I remember the first demo disc I got in the mail with, I forget which magazine it was, one of the that was crazy to me because you didn't do that with carts, and like the PS1 era started, mm-hmm. and I was like, I'm playing it, because I, you know, was nowhere near the industry, and I was just a little kid, you know. I was like, I'm playing the game before it's out. This is so awesome. And that just blew me away. Now you just go onto Xbox Live and just download tons of demos and try them all out, and yeah. It's crazy.
I remember registering just for, you know, remember Blockbuster used to have those video game invitational, like, award things they have in each store? I don't know if you guys remember
this.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, I remember this.
I remember just registering to play those games that you couldn't play ahead of time because they were all, like, Super Nintendo games.
Yeah.
And, like, the certain collector's edition of Donkey Kong Country and things like that, I remember.
Anyone else want to chime in with any other? Oh, I got another one.
We could go all day.
We could.
It'll just go into like random video game memories.
What was yours, Del Rio?
The Dreamcast.
Oh yeah. Oh, like, that is hard to hit. So Del Rio's is NFL 2K on Dreamcast, which was a huge wake up call for Madden. And to this day, I would submit that there are things that NFL 2K did right with speed and pace of the game and presentation that Madden still hasn't caught up to.
2K5 was awesome.
It was pretty fucking awesome. Dreamcast in general,
dude. It was so good mm-hmm. that they were never allowed to make another football game. Official football game, at least.
Dreamcast in general was, man, it's hard for me to put it in the how far have we come category, but I don't know. Like, that's a tough call, isn't it? Like, I want to because I have such a love for Dreamcast, but I'm not sure that I could throw it in the how far have we come category. It's more of the, like, that was really awesome and I have lots of great memories category.
Online gaming, maybe?
Yeah.
Online, I was just thinking, like,
Mech Assault, I think, was the
PSO.
First Xbox. Yeah, PSO.
Oh, well, PSO, like that, like, we know lots of people who spent countless hours PSOing. Would you say that was a how far have we come or an evolution?
Maybe an evolution.
Yeah, see, that's like I struggled, like, the other one I was struggling with is, like, where does World of Warcraft fit into this? You know, like other games had, I mean, obviously there was EverQuest, that it was way before that, there was Ultima Online, that
maybe
was way before
a
that.
Giant evolutionary leap with that?
Right.
Well, like, look how far we've come, that 12 million people have registered to play this game, and not all of them are specifically geared or specifically hardcore
gamers.
Yeah,
that one's not necessarily tech or game design, that's just reach.
And then look how far we came for me from WoW was the first time I did a raid.
Mm.
The first time I did a raid was pretty, like
40 man?
Yeah, you're like, what the fuck is going on here? There's, like, giant monsters, there's all kinds of, like, and you're split into mini squads, and it's like, you're on the healing team, and you've got, like, someone else who's, like, telling all the healers what to do, and then you've got, like, the attack DPS team, you've got, like, the tank team, and everyone's, like, playing all these roles, and you're like, this is fucking nuts.
I never got into EverQuest, but didn't EverQuest do that before?
It could have. Wow. So for me, because not being an EverQuest player, it would have been that.
One thing that comes to mind real quick is just this week, Xbox Live had an issue in the games marketplace and a few of their other marketplaces went down for a couple of hours, and online gaming still worked. And then everyone seemed to be freaking out, like, oh, you know, some people were saying maybe it's a hack or something. It obviously wasn't, but it was all these people going crazy that their service, these other extended services offered by Xbox Live were not working. And after I was thinking, like, when Xbox Live first started, that was the only thing you were allowed to do.
Yeah.
You could only play games online. One game had DLC, and it was like Mech Assault had free DLC like 3 months later or something. And it's like, we've come so far as to this point where now we require so much more, or we expect so much more from these services because we've been given so much already.
Like when PSN was down, a lot of people were worried about, oh, can I get MLB TV still? Like, can I watch every single baseball game ever over my PS3? Like, that's how far we've come.
And well, that's a good one. That is
people,
a really good
people
one.
People would mod their original Xboxes just to be able to use them as media centers, and now all of those features and more are included in your PS3 and your Xbox.
Guess the fucking Trojan horse worked pretty damn well, didn't it? Because
yes,
we were
did.
All worried about it, and lo and behold, it looks like it worked and was successful because now it is that box under the television. And speaking of the services, to bring this thing to a close, a comment that Mar over on Gaff made was that he was interested to hear our thoughts on purely digital distribution world now that we've heard a very good case for physical copies of games, because we both sounded interested by collector's mindset. I assume that you haven't gone through the negatives of physical copies of games disappearing. So, as a collector, the idea of digital distribution worries Mar. Not only does that mean the loss of the control of the game that you buy, but for all these reasons that all of these memories that we have, all of these great things about, like, talking about having these Super Nintendo cartridges, having Game Boy cartridges, all gone. How do you guys feel about that with digital distribution?
I think I was talking with Shane Bettenhausen about this maybe like a year ago, and he's big into collecting physical stuff. Like, if you saw his collection in his room of like movies and music, like he's got good taste in a lot of like different media, and it's almost at the point where you run out of space, but you want to keep the stuff that not defines you but reflects you.
Absolutely.
And your taste. So if someone comes over and it's like, oh, like, what's that book? Or it's like, oh, actually, this is, I'm glad you asked. Like, you would love this. That's if you kind of lose that, unless you're like sitting together on a couch browsing through your digital stuff.
That's the thing. I get that feeling, and I feel that same way. At least I want to, but then I made the transition so quickly with photos. Where people used to say a thing like you'd have their photo True. Album at home, and now it's all on my computer or my phone. And every now and again, I'll show, oh, you got to see this picture. But before, you could come over and you'd be like, oh, you went to Boston. That's so cool. That from that, and you just don't. It doesn't happen anymore.
That is really interesting. It's so strange that happens now, because if anything should be the element that defines you as a person, it's these personal moments that are captured, you know, in a photograph.
A couple weeks ago.
Facebook.
But we just like,
music.
Now it's on Facebook. And yeah, exactly.
A couple weeks ago, I brought home just this bag of pictures from like my life of me that my family like found for me, like with all my family, like through school, like soccer
That's
pictures.
Cool.
And what did I do? I scanned them all.
Yeah.
I scanned every single one.
And then burned them.
No, they're back in the closet. Like,
yeah.
Like
And the other thing is, it's a matter of access. Because one thing that's very cool about the progression of classics on digital is that there are very few people who are going to have a collection like Shane has. However, there's mm-hmm. some great games in Shane's collection that if you are a game player, you would adore playing, that you would really love playing. And yeah. by having them digitally, it gets access to them. So there's like two things going on here. There is the game, which is like the ethereal idea of like the IP, the content, the stuff you want to play. And then there's the actual, I'm holding a cartridge in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, some people who are collectors, who are avid, like to have that symbol of what defines them and what their actual preferences are, or what genres they like, or the franchises they admire. The thing that I think is funny is like we talk about games like Outland. That's a game that you played that you love that you'll never have a physical copy of, because that's yep. only a digital copy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two sections, I think. I mean, unless the game comes out on a disc, which some times they do that. But and yes, I said do. So I think that's really interesting. But the problem though that I'm finding is like, I care more about the experiences now, getting older and not having a very big place to live, than having the shelf space to present that to the world as, this is what I have completed, this is who I am. I'd rather people get to know me than have to look at my shelf and be like, oh, you like this game, and then we don't get along because they think that it sucks or something, and they can go to hell.
The key thing is going to be that access, though, because
yep.
if you can't go... Like,
right.
A picture is a picture is a picture. JPEG is a universal format, more or less, and... Outland, yeah, who knows what you're going to play that on in 5 years.
And it's in news, but, you know, in a world where 16% of all of EA sales last year were at GameStop, it's not going to disappear very soon.
We will let you think about that a little bit while you listen to some digital music. LA-based producer and MC Longevity with his latest single, Tantrum.
Here's a hip-hop anthem. Everybody in this motherfucker, stand up. Ladies in the place, put your hands up. Fellas, make loud noise like a handgun. Microphones, turntables, and some. Beating patterns in your brains like a hand drum. Hold your throat, we hold quotes ransom. Turn the volume up to 10 and have a tantrum. The beat, the bass that rattles the place. The battles you face can make it disappear like a phantom. The heat we lace, the streets we pace in deep space. Got my New York nigga saying, to go against the intense, you're losing your sense. At my expense, you be sent back to plan one. Or commence to mince and rinse the dents, the distance, hence my sentence. Champion, longevity, go hard. Bogart, pull whole cars, roll large, get your and one. Gotta show your own guard, most smart, hold no parts, keep a low score, random. I get visual if need be, go knee deep, 3D, be the TV, random. I get physical, read me, be me, here's a freebie, CD, have one. This here's a hip-hop anthem. Everybody in this motherfucker, stand up. Ladies in the place, put your hands up. Fellas, make loud noise like a handgun. Microphones, turntables, and some. Beating patterns in your brains like a hand drum. Hold your throat, we hold quotes ransom. Turn the volume up to 10 and have a tantrum. Ringing alarms when I perform. It's out of the norm, beyond reborn. The way the heat rocks. Bringing the storm that's equal to warm. The evil is on, put all my people's arm with a beatbox. We defeat blocks, meet shock. Completely just repeat what he mocks. Upon a swarm, we'll be harmed. To the break of dawn, you have to warn how we treat cops. Fold them, hold them, unload on them, scold them. And like I always told them, we don't need Glocks. stole them, reload them, showed them, mold them from the roots to the soil to the treetops. Now you're blind with no spine and out of your mind. The world is mine and I can find your weak spot. On a grind that's one of a kind, decline divine. Never mind the bullshit, this is street hop. This here's a hip hop anthem. Everybody in this motherfucker stand up. Ladies in the place, put your hands up. Fellas make loud noise like a hand drum. Microphones, turntables, and some. Beating patterns in your brains like a hand drum. Hold your throat, we hold quotes ransom. Turn the volume up to 10 and have a tantrum. This here's a hip-hop anthem. Everybody in this motherfucker stand up. Ladies in the place, put your hands up. Fellas make loud noise like a handgun. Microphones, turntables, and some. Beating patterns in your brains like a hand drum. Hold your throat, we hold quotes ransom. Turn the volume up to 10 and have a tantrum. Tantrum, tantrum, tantrum,
tantrum. Like the man says, tantrum. That's longevity. You can pick up that title right now on iTunes where they have the single. There's also a music video, which we will have the link to in the show notes. And don't forget to go by his Facebook fan page. All right, it's time for the news with the new news maestro, Mr. Zav D'Amatos.
Coming to you live from ShaqNews.com. We have actually a giveaway right now at ShaqNews.com. We're giving away with support from Intel, Roxio, and the people at Codemasters.
Are you going to try and explain this thing?
No, not really. Basically what it is we're giving away one grand prize and four runner-up prizes. You can win a Intel Core i5 processor, some video game capture software, and a copy of Operation Flashpoint if you go to ShaqNews.com. The giveaway is going on until Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific. Go to ShaqNews to figure out how you can win that prize.
It's like a multi-stage festival of fun.
It's like you go to Intel's website and you create a trailer. It takes you a couple minutes, and then you post your trailer, and then we have some wizards that are going to select the best one.
Wizards. So,
wizards are involved. Fucking ninja wizards. All right, so moving on. Sony estimates their hack cost $171 million. That's approximately based on the Google conversion rate at the time of publishing this post. So Sony has posted its revised fiscal year forecast and noted, as of today... This is a quote. As of today, our current associated costs related to the PlayStation Network and SOE hack for the fiscal year ending March 2012 are estimated to be approximately 14 billion yen. That's approximately $171.4 million. Of course, this wasn't the only reason why their fiscal year forecast was altered. Of course, the Japanese earthquake hit them pretty severely as well, estimating 150 billion yen, which is $1.83 billion U.S., hit their operating income for 2012, the fiscal year 2012, with an additional 17 billion yen, $208 million in the
All right, that's a whole lot of numbers. Let's talk about this estimate that they put on the hack to the PlayStation Network at $171 million. That only breaks down to, one of the Shackers did this, by the way. I wish I had written his name down. One of the Shackers noted that that's only $2 a head.
Yeah,
security experts have the number at $310 a head. So there's a little disparity here between what the industry standard for these kind of security breaches is and
also,
what Sony's guesstimating.
This does not even consider the companies that were affected. This is Sony themselves. This doesn't consider, like, Capcom has said that they've lost hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars because of the Sony stuff. You mentioned Pixel Junk.
Those guys have been shut down. As a matter of fact, and here's even the weirder part. I was listening to their podcast yesterday, and by the way, they do a great podcast. You should absolutely listen to Pixel Junk Radio. It's pretty hilarious. It's about like 1/10 about Pixel Junk Games and the rest of them horsing around while drinking sake and talking about like expats in Japan sort of stuff, which is really kind of hilarious. They're talking about how they had a campaign already set with Famitsu to run an ad for Pixel Junk Games. And so they're running this ad that they paid for in Famitsu to go tell you to buy a game that you can't even go buy because the network's down. How frustrating would that be?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, obviously this number, this is their own fiscal year forecast. And they've put a lot more weight in the fact that the earthquake hit was more severe. Do you think that maybe this total maybe makes sense to them in terms of their new fiscal calendar? Do you think that maybe they're mixing?
I think they're hedging their bets. I think they're trying to put a good face on things.
Right.
And that ultimately, over the course of several business quarters, that they'll in essence, sort of amortize the expenses of these things
right.
so that it doesn't have a tremendous impact in any one spot, it's going to have cost them a large amount of money.
This also, I don't think, even considers how much it's going to cost them to make up for the issues that they had in terms of giving people free content and paying for people's insurance. There's insurance here for the company itself, but paying for other people's insurance in order to get their credits checked.
Yeah, the identity theft protection.
But they just turned on. Yeah. I got my email. Did you get your email?
I got my email.
Or hiring the security team that came in and did all the evaluations that aren't internal, normal Sony guys. I mean,
right.
Who knows where this number comes from? That's the thing. This is still a big number. And it could seem like it should be much, much bigger.
This will be way more interesting when they release their next quarterly projection and how it's going to change to see whether or not it's still being affected in terms of their financial structure and how they're actually looking at their fiscal forecast for 2012-2013.
Is it bad of me that I'm kind of anxious for the story to go away and get back to talking about just games with Sony?
Yeah, and that's why we're not talking about Sony anymore. Let's move on to something else. Duke Nukem Forever has gone gold.
What?
Cats and dogs living together.
Oh, my God.
Chaos, ladies
oh
and gentlemen.
Oh, my God.
Duke Nukem Forever, a game that has been in development since the day I was born. Okay, probably not.
Since the dawn of time.
Probably not that long. But has been in development for quite some time. Has finally gone gold. The game is coming out on June 14th in North America, June 10th internationally, depending on where you live and whether or not the game is going to be made available for you. On June 3rd, of course, a demo will be released for first Access Club members. That's if you pre-order the game or if you have Borderlands Game of the Year edition.
That's a good group of people to give a demo to. People have already committed to buying the game.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great idea.
I would just want to see the people like, I was expecting something different. It's been 15 years, you fuck. It's been a long time.
Do you see the pic? I can't remember where it came from, but someone posted a picture of a guy who had his original pre-order slip from Babbage's.
Holy
who's,
shit.
Who's going to try
Dude,
it
that's so many things are dead yeah. now. That tree, that store,
Babbage's
dreams.
Yes. Did you remember like walking into Babbage's and they had like the row of video of televisions and mm-hmm. and there was like television one and had like some, you know, had a video playing, television two, video playing, television three.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was like a bronze plaque with like Mr. Babbage and like some explanation about like why you were like walking into Babbage's.
We were joking about this earlier today. It's like if companies wanted to do like a deal where you get Duke Nukem Forever under video cards. Like, what is it going to come with a Voodoo 2?
But no, there is one. There literally is. Like, one of the NVIDIA card companies is making a George
You were serious?
Oh,
I thought
dude.
This was a hilarious
no,
riff.
No,
I thought
totally,
you were, like, on a roll.
No, that's totally real. There's a GeForce 560 card that is the, like, Duke edition. It's like...
Wow. It's the crappier version of that card.
You can play the game 17 times in the background
it's
if
Duke's,
you want.
It's Duke's package, man. And then the fan cover on the video card has like a Duke graphic on it.
That's kind of cool.
And I was joking that like, yeah, I guess the Canopus contract
hey, you know
ran
what?
Out.
The fact oh, that man. Every time we post about Duke Nukem Forever on Shaq News and people explode with anticipation is you know, people are anticipating the game and it's finally going to come out.
I explode with morbid curiosity.
Yeah. So what the hell is going to happen with this game when it comes out? Because I am...
DLC.
I agree with you.
It's going to come out in 15 years.
Like, I from the... Like, sheerly from the, like, having been in this business as long as we have and, right. and like, it being having been there, I'm going to play the game, okay? Mm-hmm. There's, like, this piece of, like, video game...
It's history.
It's historical, definitely, in the fact that it exists, even... But I have to say, like...
Where does it go from here?
It doesn't look that good.
You don't have to whisper that, man. Like, here,
it's
people
not,
can see it.
Yeah, the game, I mean, people will see it when the demo comes out. The thing that I think is really interesting to me is that if you talk to guys like Randy Pitchford and, you know, Steve Gibson, those guys on that team, they're super excited for this game to come out. They have a legacy with this game themselves.
They absolutely do.
Yeah. So I think what happens next, if anything does happen next, is what I'm really excited for. This is sort of like, okay, let's get it out there so the joke can die.
Mm-hmm.
The people realize that this franchise still exists. I think it'll be really interesting to see whether or not it sells very well at $60.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see whether me personally, whether I can differentiate or like if I can sit there and enjoy Duke for what it is, as in like this anachronistic like thing, as opposed to just saying, well, it's not as good as Call of Duty. It doesn't have like volumetric smoke. It doesn't have particle effects. Fuck this thing.
If you're not paying for it, I think it's easier to do that. If you're the kid that goes home and buys it for $60 and they could have bought something else, I think it's going to be hard. Even if you're in on the joke, you're going to be hard pressed to be like, I totally.
That is a damn good point.
I want Modern Warfare 3. Yeah.
There is anticipation with those people who know the legacy of this game, but then there are people who don't know this character or this franchise at all. And if they go out to buy the new hotness because they hear all their like older friends talking about it, or people that they know are playing this game online in communities, and they realize this isn't the game for me, this isn't what I thought
And is it because that we lived through it before that we still think that that sort of Lo Wang, Shadow Warrior, Duke Nukem humor element is sort of like funny, but in a nostalgic way funny? Like, I don't know that I still think it's funny in and of itself
That's the thing I'm wondering about. Like, if it does well for whatever reason and they decide to keep the franchise going, do they update their satire? Do they, like, actually take it seriously? Like, you know, you look at South Park Season 1 versus South Park Today.
Oh, so
like,
right.
Look at Duke Nukem 3D versus Bulletstorm.
Right. Yeah, you know, Bulletstorm is kind of the modern Duke.
Well, yeah, we've all said that all along. Yeah. Well, but I think I'm not sure that having seen Bulletstorm, I agree with that in toto, because it doesn't have the personality. And the one thing that Duke like forged so strong was the Duke Nukem character. And like, tell me right now, any
Which
of you
didn't really
any of you tell me the lead character name in Bulletstorm?
Dick Grayson.
Is that all right, it? Fine, fuck off.
I don't know.
Well, I think satire's even
Gray Dixon
move past Duke, though, to Portal, which has tons of character. Okay. I know it's a different style, but it's you know, still first person. It has tons of character, tons of satire, cultural references, hysterical, in on the joke, and we're past Duke. Quit giving me pouty, frowny, disagree.
I'm pursing my lips because I'm not sure that
they're different styles of game. I get that, but I'm saying, like, to me, that's where games have moved to instead of cock and balls, fucking bitches, cock and balls. Like, Portal makes those jokes.
What
funny.
Are you, a girl?
Like,
Portal is Portal is college, or Portal is high school, and Duke is like grade school, juvenile. Like, it's funny at that age. It's funny for what it is in that, you know, container, but.
Strangely though, I really want to play it.
I know too.
I know it's
I
so
do
weird.
Too. So
it's
that's
so
the,
fucked
I
up.
I know it's so fucked up because I totally am with you, and I'm like, I don't understand.
Like, yeah, it's I don't know. It's the morbid curiosity. Like, you want to see. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm.
It's like, are they putting something in the water?
Maybe, I don't know. Strange stuff afoot. Here's something else. Age of Conan is going free to play and is getting an unrated version, ladies and gentlemen. That was an air quotes. You can't see it, but that was an air quotes.
That was a beautiful air quote.
Age of Conan will be relaunched under a free-to-play model this summer. Age of Conan Unrated is what it's going to be called. And players, and this is probably my favorite quote I've ever heard in my entire life, going unrated, this is from Funcom publisher, going unrated also let Age of Conan reaffirm, and this is the quote, its position as the sexiest and most savage MMO in the world.
Sexy and savage?
Sexy and savage MMO. Strange stuff. So, of course, the game is going to have a subscription model. You can pay regular subscriptions.
For even
they'll
sexier.
They'll also be selling even sexier.
The best word in there is reaffirm. Like we, oh, yeah, that's right. It is.
There's so
it
much
is the sexiest and most savage MMO.
It's forgot.
It's positioned as the sexiest and most savage MMO is
fetch my loincloth.
Eat it, Asheron's call. Here we go.
Previous record holder for sexiness and MMO-ness. Okay.
And savagery.
And savageness. So $14.99 per month is what it costs right now to play the game online. There will still be a subscription model. They haven't said what it's going to cost. There's also going to be a plethora of things you can purchase. And, from
Would
the
you say that we have a plethora?
Store.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Plethora. Do you see my sexier pics? Plethora? Send me an email.
Including exclusive content such as sexy weaponry and savage mounts for a couple of you players out there.
Did you read the so two things about this? Number one, did you read the comments that the Shackers, because there was a great conversation that the Shackers were having underneath there about how the
about how sexy it was
about no, how the free to play model is working great for Lord of the Rings because they did it quote unquote using my sexy air quotes the right way. And the thing about Lord of the Rings they liked is that in Lord of the Rings you're playing free, and then when you buy things you buy them a la carte, and once you've bought them they become part of your experience, whereas this game is very limited in what they're offering.
Super limited. So quickly, If you play the free-to-play version, you have fewer character slots than those who play premium. Yep. You can only play as certain classes. You can be blocked from sieges in certain dungeons. You are stuck, literally, you are stuck riding slow mounts. They give you slower mounts if you don't pay. It's, I mean, really, guys, this, I think, is going a little too far in terms of free-to-play model. And you know, they still have their regular subscription base. And so why not release a demo or give everyone 2 weeks trial free or something? To me, it doesn't make sense.
Really good point that the Shackers brought out. And then for me personally, it's interesting to see the change in Conan, because one of the things that was great about Conan is it has a great combat system. And it was the original World of Warcraft killer, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. It was the first game that like really made a run at World of Warcraft. And I remember seeing this game 5 years ago. I mean, Funcom had the hardest time getting it launched because they were like really trying to push the tech. They were really trying to get like a prettier, fancier, more in-depth, sexier, more savage version of World of Warcraft out there. And, you know, it just goes to show you that it is virtually impossible to go up head-to-head with World of Warcraft. Not virtually. It's pretty much impossible.
Well, yeah, we know that.
It's pretty much so. Done it. And I'm just going to throw this out there. Where does that lead Star Wars?
Well, that'll be the, either that is going to be the thing that does it, or that's going to be the thing that confirms for everyone that it's impossible to do.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
It's a big fight.
It's going to be epic, ladies and gentlemen. So, moving on, EA is focusing on more hits and releasing fewer games now. This is coming
like
from
Star
their,
Wars.
Like Star Wars, which is coming out, fuck knows when, Jesus. Developer and publisher EA reveals its plans to yet again cut the number of titles it releases per year. They've been doing this the last 2 years in a row now. They're expecting to only release approximately 22 primary titles. This is down from 36 last year and 54 in 2010, the fiscal year of 2010.
I just imagine the meeting. Guys, we should only do awesome games.
And then
let's just do awesome games.
And then that one guy in the corner is being punched repeatedly for releasing Mirror's Edge because that game did not sell, ladies and gentlemen. Publishing fewer titles, this is a quote, publishing fewer titles means that we can concentrate more on development spending on each title, and driving hit titles often requires large marketing budgets and media spend. It's true. I mean, look at the media spend behind a Call of Duty on Activision's side or a Halo for Microsoft.
How many of these 22 is going to be Need for Speed?
Oh!
Actually.
One a year.
You joke, but here it is. In North America, revenue was driven by the following titles: Madden NFL 11, Battlefield Bad Company 2, and Medal of Honor. In Europe, it was FIFA Soccer 11, Medal of Honor, and Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, that being the Criterion game that came out.
Good game.
Early this year. I liked it. Yeah. Good but game. What is that Need for Speed? Honestly, what is that Need for Speed 13, 14? 17?
Who knows?
A lot of Need for Speed
numbers don't matter in that series anymore.
No, it's true. But that was a good game, so whatever. But yeah, they also made really interesting that it was actually in the fiscal, their actual record for the year, they mentioned that direct sales from GameStop accounted for 16% of their net revenue, and Walmart was 10%. So this is like physical game sales, obviously huge still in this industry. Digital is going up for a lot of industries. Activision, their investors talked about how their digital market is going up. I think it went up. I don't even remember the percentage. We talked about it 2 weeks ago on the show, if you want to find out specifically.
I don't feel that this is completely misplaced, that I have some faith in Riccatello. Them reducing overall number of titles does not just immediately set off alarm bells to me, because
not at all.
There's baseline stuff they're going to do. Like, we know they're going to do all of their sports franchises. We know that they're now committed to Medal of Honor. But by the way, this is also the company that brought Dead Space out, and they made Dead Space work. And I think that what they will do is be a little more selective at what they look at for new IP. Mm-hmm. But you know what? They gave Mirror's Edge a chance, and as much as we love it, it for some reason didn't resonate and didn't connect. And I would love to see them still take those risks, which I think they recognize they need to and have to take, but maybe just won't push out as many shovelware titles.
Right. Dead Space 2 was a risk because the first game didn't sell to their expectation. And so they've already done that. And this is, remember, these are primary titles. This is also the company that has an EA Partners program that they really promote. They have their digital arm that's doing indie games like Warp that's coming out later this year or the beginning of next year. They're doing, aren't they all, are they publishing Fez? I don't know if they're publishing Fez, but you know they do have other avenues that they release titles. These are the primary titles, so hopefully, I mean, 22 games or 22 primary games, that is a lot of sports games that they do release per year. So,
yeah, so you take like 5 or 6 sports titles out of that, and then leaves them like, you know, 16 games, of which a few of them, you know, maybe 60% of them will be sequels and proven franchises, but that means they're still probably going to pump out, I don't know, 3 to 5 original IP attempts a year.
I would hope so. Dude,
maybe we'll find out in a week and a half at the press conference. I mean, what's new?
These are the guys that are doing Reckoning.
Yeah,
and that's certainly
your partners. Yeah, the thing that I think I don't want to see is EA has Battlefield Bad Company. They have Battlefield 3 and they have Medal of Honor. I don't want to see a year where they're like, let's release all three of them this year. You know what I mean? That needs to be something they stagger out. Mm-hmm. Those genres, they need to make sure that they're not pumping too much into those genres. They basically have three franchises battling Activision's one primary title.
They need to find an identity for Medal of Honor.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that last game didn't do it for me at all.
It sold really well.
It sold well. Like, I would say really well. It did like 5 million worldwide. I'm just saying that within the context of what they have, like, they are obviously positioning Battlefield 3 to be the Call of Duty combatant. Mm-hmm. So if you've got that guy who's the heavyweight in that ring, why do you want to bring another one into that ring and make it like you're battling yourself as well? Do something different with Medal of Honor, you know? Maybe make it narrative focused. Maybe make it co-op focused. Maybe make it, I don't know, do something. Like, find its space to make it unique and not just, well, we're going to go after that Call of Duty, you know, militaristic shooter thing.
Moving on from news, one thing that, Andrew, since you're here, you could probably talk about, Play for Japan revealed their new album.
We announced it last week, I believe. 18 tracks coming out early June. I would pay close attention to E3 week. It's going to be a busy week, but maybe it'll drop there. And I've actually been able to listen to it, and it's pretty awesome. Like, it's just inspiring.
How would you describe the musical styling?
Eclectic.
Okay.
18 different composers from East and West. Throughout the video game industry. And you have guys who work in like video games and TV. Like, we got Bear McCreary on there. He did the music for Battlestar.
Awesome.
His track is just this awesome like guitar. It starts out, you know, kind of 8-bitty beeps and boops into this really awesome, just like full-on guitar thrashing, Mega Man-ish. Oh, it's so good. I can't wait for people to hear all this stuff.
Nice.
And Koji Kondo does a 2-piano medley of Super Mario tunes.
Oh, really?
I'm just really excited for
it. Okay, that alone might be worth the price of entry.
Yeah.
Proceeds of which go to...
100% of the proceeds will go to the Japanese Red Cross, and this might not be the end of it.
Great.
Oh!
You recently, Play for Japan recently hit over $120,000 for all the auctions that happen through eBay that you guys help sponsor or help promote. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of stuff still, I think, available. Some God of War stuff and Assassin's Creed.
I think the God of War stuff expired. I think Assassin's Creed also expired, but we haven't shut that down completely. If we're still, you know, actively looking and talking with people about stuff to auction on.
Cool. And we had Todd.
Right?
Todd? We did that as part of the...
I can sign a copy of GoldenEye for Wii.
Done.
Right, Game of the Year on it. Game of the Year 2010, and then just put an arrow. Right. Because it'll always be Game of the Year.
Do you think we could get Che to sign a copy of Perfect Dark for 360?
Can you... Only if you sign a copy of Prey.
He'd love it.
Moving on.
Wow, I had legs before you cut them off.
Well played.
Shinobi coming to the 3DS. Sega announced that a Griptonite Games is making a 3DS version of the Shinobi series, is coming back after many, many years dormant. Last game, I think, was on PS2. There was Shinobi and the Nightshade, which is sort of like a spinoff of Shinobi. So Griptonite Games was the developer that made Assassin's Creed Bloodlines for the Nintendo DS. They released a legacy trailer.
Is that a bad?
If I'm remembering the right Assassin's Creed on DS.
It may be great or horrific, so we'll have to wait and see. There is a legacy trailer that you can watch on shacknews.com that kind of goes through the Shinobi series, and you get to see a little bit of what you're going to get in the new Shinobi game for the 3DS.
I might be misremembering
Assassin's Creed game. One of them was good, and I forget which one it was, too, but one of them was a fun little DS game.
I don't know, but Shane and I both liked Shinobi on PS2. I remember that.
I liked that game, too.
That was fun.
That was good. Nightshade was not very good.
That was fun. And remember, like...
Was that the one where you were running on the helicopter blades?
And had, like, the awesome, like, scarf physics.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah. Yeah, Shane and I were like, I remember talking, wow, on a podcast. Wow. You know, we're going to do that at E3.
You don't say, Garnet.
We're going to do that at E3.
You're into it now? You're into it?
Nah, I'm just going to watch and listen.
What are we going to do?
Davis still talking about video games?
For people who, yeah. We're just going to totally do it at E3. We're going to do that at E3.
Totally do it at E3. Watch and listen at E3.
You're into it.
Hey, if you're excited about E3, the week of E3, the special E3 Weekend Confirmed will be...
There's going to be people in town.
Will be a reunion show. Andrew Pfister will be on the Wheels of Steel, and it'll also involve that guy that works at Bungie. What's his name?
He has a beard.
Yeah, I remember.
Slams the table.
Oh, Master Chief.
Master Chief.
It's like a little hobbity dude.
Oh, wait, no. Master Chief got fired from Bungie. Never mind.
Some blonde Germanic guy.
A Brit.
Yeah, and a Brit. And then a couple of weirdos, like, with, I don't know.
And copious amounts of alcohol.
Hopefully. We're going to do it right here.
Yeah.
On Friday morning. Hopefully. Are we doing it on Friday morning? I guess. To be decided.
All right.
Anyway, continue with the news.
Okay.
Sorry for the interruption.
Sorry. Douglas Adams' much-loved comic sci-fi series, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, is going to be spun off into some sort of thing by Hothead Games. They had a very strange press release that had a quote that said that they are going to spin...
Well, it was cool.
It was cool, but they didn't explicitly say that it was going to be a game. More likely than not, it is going to be a game from Hothead Games, the developer of Deathspank 1 and 2, and Swarm, also the Penny Arcade Adventure games. The official site notes that the game will be available for, quote, all of the latest primitive digital devices. So look for that when that comes out.
Dude, if I can get a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on my phone, I am so fucking in.
That'd be cool.
I am so in. I don't care what kind of widget fucking weird bullshit thing it is. If I can just like screw around with that fictional world through like a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in my phone, I will be in.
Don't have it in news here, but I did want to mention also Deathspank 3, The Baconing.
The Baconing announced.
Was announced. Is that still Hothead that's making that? I'm not entirely sure.
Is Deathspank 4 coming out right after 3 comes out?
It's going to actually come out first, and then Deathspank 3 is going to come out 2 weeks. It's going to be totally fucked up.
You know, I really liked Deathspank, but I didn't even throw on the second one, the Thongs of Virtue, like because I was like, okay, I played it. That was really fun.
You didn't
fun.
Throw on the Thongs of Virtue? Okay.
I'm just saying, by the time I got to the end of it, I'm like, okay, that was really fun, but I had done it. That was it.
Birds of Steel, a new World War II-based game that will attempt to the unholy task of melding the action of a first-person shooter and the combat of a flight simulator, is coming from Gaijin Games, developer of Apache Air Assault, for the Xbox 360 and PS3. Essentially, it is basically like their IL-2 games that they've developed for console. If you're a combat flight sim guy, you might want to take a look at it. We have... announcement trailer on shacknews.com. There's also a few more details and screenshots there.
Just reminds me of Blades of Steel.
Blades of Steel.
Blades of Steel.
Every time.
Favorite hockey game ever.
Every time hockey. I would write Birds of Steel in the story, I would accidentally put Birds of War or Birds of Iron. Like, there was all these other Birds of games. I hope that's DLC. You can download those audio tracks every time you're flying. Or, like, just fly through flocks of birds and just cut them up.
And then land on water.
Exactly. Like Sully. Sully knows how to get it done. Last but not least, Trenched, the Double Fine new downloadable title, is coming to the XBLA on June 22nd for $15. This one is published by Microsoft Game Studios, so I wouldn't hold your breath for a release on any other platform, but you never know. Happened with Ninja Gaiden 2. Maybe you'll get to see it on another platform. And that is news.
That is the news. All right, gentlemen, you know what that means. It's time to break out your... finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
Mr. Christian Spicer, since you are quiet during the news section, I'm going to get you to finish them first.
Christian doesn't believe in news.
Oh, news. Ugh. I had one prepared, but then I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I was thinking about wow moments for the next generation of gamers. And I think one that might be it is, and I think it's interesting, is you have games like the Tom Clancy Ghost Recon Online was just announced versus Tom Clancy. I'm saying Tom Clancy a lot. Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Future Soldier, and they're doing similar things. And the one is free to play online, and the other is going to be a $60, you know, buy to get into it. And if you watch the trailer for online, it's, you know, cutting edge graphics, intense action, all the latest weaponry. And so I think I'm curious to see the evolution of that free to play space mobile browser-based gaming versus $60 experience, I think could be people's wow moment, saying, we used to buy this shit, and now we just play it. And so I'm curious to see where that leads.
That's interesting, actually, if the free-to-play does catch on. Andrew Pfister, finish him.
Every year, about this time, right before E3, I watch the movie Almost Famous, because it's one of my it's one of my most favorite movies, because it's about a young kid getting involved in writing about a hobby he loves. And that's kind of what happened to me in video games. And I watch it before E3 because usually it's a very stressful time. And especially this year, there's a lot of, you know, stress going on in the background, and you kind of lose sight of why you're here and why you're doing this. And I just love this time, the pre-E3 stuff, where you actually get excited about looking forward to games that you want to play. And it's just, you got to stop. You got to force yourself to just kind of get that perspective back. And you're in this. I'm here because I enjoy it, because I love it. And I love the people around me.
I love you, man.
Love you too.
I do. I love that you like still have that. Like, I love that. I love that you get excited like that. I love that. I love getting excited about E3 too. Like, honestly,
one of my favorite things is putting together a list of games. It's that I think will be at E3 and just looking at them and be like, yes, 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 yes.
I could still like sit there giddy with anticipation for them to open the door, to get onto the floor, to like check out the next, to go to the next demo, to see the next game, to see the next demo.
The press conferences. Always fun.
Always
fun.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Zav D'Amatos, finish him.
Well, extension to that on E3, there was a post on shacknews.com about E3, and I was asking people to tell us what they want out of E3. Of course, we're going to be there, but a lot of people who are reading at home won't be able to actually visit the show floor. And we want to know what you want to see from there. Go to shacknews.com, let us know in the comment thread or in chatty. Tell us the games that you're looking forward to that you may think may be overlooked, you know, in terms of, there's someone who constantly tells me, Stronghold 3, I'm going to go look for it because that guy wants me to go check it out. We're going to check out games that people want to read about. So make sure to go to chatty and shacknews.com. Tell us what you want to see out of E3.
Yeah, we're here to be your eyes and ears virtually. All right, so mine is sort of a combination of a couple of things. You guys know, like, one of the things I once upon a time was into was My Pile of Shame. Squadron of Shame is out there, and those guys do a great job with that. And then the other part of this that came into this week is I saw this amazing TED video where this guy, and I wish I had written out his name, was talking about the filter bubble. And the filter bubble is this concept that as algorithmic routines come into filtering the search results that we get on Google and other sources, that our window into the world, instead of being opened by the internet, is actually being shut down because these filters are trying to algorithmically figure out what do you like, Zav, and then I'm going to keep giving you more of what you like and not showing you the broader breadth of experiences that are out there. And so my thing is, my finishing move is, you know what? Try and go back and play those games that you looked at once upon a time and said, I'd really like to play that game. And don't be caught up with having to get the next filter bubble game that we're all talking about. You know what? If LA Noire doesn't appeal to you, no matter how much we fucking talk about it, don't go fucking play it. Play something that you're excited about. Go back and play something you put on the pile. It's very easy to get caught in that filter bubble. It's very easy to say, you know what? I'm going to go down to the movie theater this week and I'm going to watch Hangover 2. Not because I wanted to go see Hangover 2, but because it's there. You know, I still haven't seen The King's Speech. I wanted to see it really badly, but I still haven't seen it, but I'm going to go see Hangover 2 this weekend. No, you know what? Play those games. Go back. You'll really enjoy them. I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying Demon's Souls, and I really appreciate that you guys push me to play that. Go back and enjoy those games. And that is the end of the show. So on the end of the show note today, do go and help Brooklyn out if you have not already. She has 10 days left. She is only $195 away from her life cycle goal, and that would be amazing if we could help her get over the hump and clear that barrier. So 195 days, 10 days to go. The link is in the show notes on where to contribute to Brooklyn's ride. What else, guys? Anything else? Next week is the pre-E3 extravaganza. We will throw out ridiculous predictions. We might even make some up just for the hell of it, just for the smell of it.
If anyone likes the sound of... I know online people are like, quit with the comedy. Just talk about games. But over at this site, coolpartyguys.com, we do a podcast called Stand Up, Sit Down. We talk about jokes we're working on, and then shit just gets crazy. It's a lot of fun. It's not too inside baseball-y, like, you know, stand-up comedian world. But if you're interested in it, I encourage you to check it out and then continue to talk shit about me on Gaff.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, because that's...
That's all we do. Yeah. Hollywood, 10 p.m. Friday night?
Yeah, when you're listening to this, hustle over to Hollywood. You can find my schedule on at christianspicer.com.
Other big shows coming up?
There are. I'm opening for Colin Kane at the House of Blues in San Diego, and on June 10th, I believe, is Friday. So that'll be a fun show. And next time I'm on here, I'm looking forward to that. That's my big show.
Nice. Andrew Pfister, anything you want to like throw out there?
I'll say Play for Japan can be found at playforjapan.org. People still need help.
Zav, we know where to find you. You don't get to say anything.
No. Although you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/XAV.
Yeah, you got like a three-letter one. That's very easy to follow. You're very simple.
I signed up. Well,
you're
yes.
easily retweetable.
You could have lived through his pain of selling those games. That was a fun following those tweets. Packing them up, reminiscing of how I don't want to sell them.
And as always, big thanks to Brooklyn and Del Rio for engineering and producing today's show. Music guest was Longevity, an LA-based producer and MC, and that was Tantrum, which you will be able to pick up on the iTunes store. We'll also have links to the video and his Facebook fan page. And that is it. We are off for more beer and sushi. That's your Weekend Confirmed, and until next week, we are Ghost.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine.
Try to stop me, but they don't get close, so they do it from a distance.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.